From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie for this week is Logan's Run, the 1976 version, not the 2012 version, coming out soon with Ryan Gosling. Oh, my God.
What?
My name is Serge Dalpierre, and today our esteemed panel is...
Tim McMillan.
And...
Jim Usterman.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
Our cue point for Logan's Run is... As the MGM logo fades to black, as Leo the Lion roars a second time and it goes to black, pause it there, and we're going to do the same thing. When we get ready to go, I will count down 3, 2, 1, play, and our Film Grok projections for the day. Mortimer will start the projectors, and we'll all be in sync, so you can watch it with us talking in your ear, or you can actually listen to this while you're running from a Sandman when the crystal has turned red in your hand.
Hate it when that happens.
I know. So while you're all doing that, we're going to talk a little about... Well, Logan's Run a little bit, where it's been, where it's going,
while they're queuing up.
First times.
Well, I remember Logan's Run. When I saw it, it was the only thing that was going through my head is, boobies? Because I was like, oh, my.
Jenny Agutter, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Awesome. That was awesome.
Twice. There's twice in this film where
yes. Oh, yes. And for a young boy, I saw it at...
Oh, yeah.
What is that? I think when I saw it. Yeah, it was great. Actually, it was so great. You go ahead. I won't usurp your story.
No. That's my story, I think, is probably our story.
I went to see it. It was actually...
Not me.
As Film Grok listeners will know, I grew up in Montreal, and this movie was rated back at that time for all. Go figure. Not 14 and over.
Well, gotta love the 70s.
They're a lot.
It was
great.
Free.
Well, Quebec was up there.
Quebec was really weird. Some things would be 14. Things would be 18 and over. Some things would be for all. This was a for all. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I went with my best friend at the time, Todd Heron. Todd, if you're out there, find me. I'm sure you are.
There's such a thing as Facebook.
I'm sure you will find me. I think you found me once, actually, on the Return of Pink 5 blog.
Random?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was him, but he didn't identify himself. But and we went to see this, and we liked it so much. We stayed, that's in the days when you could sneak in and stayed for a second show, because we were blown away. Because I think at the time, when 76 kid, we'd had 2001 that really kind of blew your mind as to what could be done with science fiction. And then you had the Planet of the Apes films, and that was kind of it. Then you had other kind of slightly cheesy stuff. But this was, I know we look at it now, it's kind of cheesy, but at the time it really was a step forward in how to depict science fiction. And
this was the bar that science fiction in cinema was until Star Wars blew that out of the water, which was the next year.
A year later, that went completely further. Yeah, it was, in fact. So for me, we were fascinated, of course. The whole concept with the idea that you turn 30 and your thing turns white, blah, 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 you're red and then white and all that kind of thing. Actually, it's white later. That's right, in Sanctuary.
Okay.
Well, it's when you leave.
Oh, you mean the crystal in the center of your hand?
The crystal center of your hand. So, all these concepts are really, really cool. So, it was just awesome for a 14-year-old, and of course, all the boobies and stuff like that.
Well, maybe I'm thinking maybe the boobies were so spectacular they thought everyone should see them.
Well,
that was kind of how I felt about them at the time, at least.
Well, I think you got the idea. It was a very free society, so and I was okay. So, what about you, Duncan? You see this in the theater when you were?
In 1976. My philosophy on boobies, yes. I can sum up in one word.
Milk.
Food!
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, that was blown out.
Food.
But, I was trying to express the infant mind.
If the listeners are still with us.
If they are.
I think you did. I think I lost an eardrum right there.
Jesus.
Sorry.
Is that mic okay?
I don't know. Is it?
I think we've blown everything on the...
Yes. So what month did this come out? Do you remember? You have a good memory.
It was like in the summer.
Was it a summer?
Yeah, it was a summer. It was a big summer event film.
Oh, yeah,
I was born in the summer. In fact,
hey,
early June. So
I think
yes.
You were out in time.
I doubt my parents took me to see this in the theater or even had me with them.
Yeah,
but the first
Star Wars film. Maybe it made you what you are today.
Was the first one. Yes. In fact, my first time seeing this film was just a year ago.
Oh, I showed
when
it to
I was,
you.
Yes,
That's
when
right.
I was. Dragged kicking and screaming under coercion to watch this antiquated science fiction film called Logan's Run.
Antiquated?
Now, that was my mindset then. I actually really liked the film a lot clearly I'm approaching this from a very modern mindset nowadays relative to science fiction as a genre and over time since the 1970s. But I actually was very impressed. I can totally see where this set the bar before Star Wars in terms of its effects and also in terms of the sort of philosophical concepts that it went into. I think I think the 70s was when science fiction started being more than just some weird low-budget thing you did if you couldn't do anything else, you know? And this definitely had a lot of deep stuff in it.
There's kind of a 1984 aspect about this. You know, I mean, would you disagree?
No, I would not.
Well, totalitarian society, which, mm-hmm, of course, mm-hmm, no one had ever really done a successful 1984 production. And I'm sorry, I know 1984 was done with John Hurt and everything, and it was all nice and everything. It wasn't a very good film. I mean, they did as good as they can. But I don't think 1984 itself as a film is filmable. I think it's more of a novel. And right. I think that this is where you translate that concept and then you elaborate on it. Now, let's be clear about this, and I'll follow up on this after you talk to him. Is that this was based on a book written in 1967 by George Clayton Johnson and William F. Nolan. Johnson had written actually for Star Trek. He'd written some episodes in the first season. Mm-hmm. And in that book, actually, everyone died at 21, and it wasn't a domed city. You know, this is kind of akin to what they did for the Truman Show, which was about, you know, a New York City in a set. And so, but instead they changed it to, like, yeah, you know, essentially the set was a village, and they did the same thing with Logan's Run. Essentially, this was across the whole United States and the world and everything, that everyone died at 21. So they said, well, let's control it more. Let's make it apocalyptic. There's nothing out there, and make it some domes, because you can control, I guess, the environment. So
sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, that would, and different than 1984 is that everyone, it's very clean, but sort of a la 1950s mentality. That, you know, the public, mm-hmm, face is very controlled, and the family's all healthy, but underneath, you know, the father's having an affair with so-and-so. You know, I mean, there's this darkness, mm-hmm, under the domes that we explore.
Well, I mean, in a way, this is more akin to, actually, the kind of a bridging point that we're talking about 1984 in Logan's Run would be THX 1138, which is all about basically completely drugged society in a totalitarian, in a futuristic totalitarian environment, which is what THX is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a little cross, whereas Logan's Run is all about the freedom to live your life. And then at 30, you try for renewal. That's the whole concept. You try for renewal. Of course, no one ever is renewed, but, you know, that's what Logan.
And I know you're going to go into all that symbolism in the film as far as public perception and control through regiments and things in place. So the public thinks one thing when, in fact, just to control them.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's something I know you would.
What's the secret? It's the computer, because, of course, again, like at Star Trek, it's always the computer who does it. It's this non-human entity. So anyway, when's the first time you saw it, Tim?
I saw this in the theater when it premiered. I was 11 years old, and I sure as heck was not caught up in the conflict of the story, because being 30 was unfathomable to me. I was like, what are these people so upset about?
Well, exactly. Same here. You know, I'm sure for you, Jim, too.
It means absolutely nothing.
What's interesting is actually I was aware of my parents' age, and I thought, that seems kind of young. I don't want my parents to die.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even think of that. I was just like, oh, 30. Oh, that's forever. Go ahead. Anyway, Tim.
And so now I see it when I'm 46 today. It's a little different.
Hits
a little closer to home, should I say.
This is why Tim always wears a glove on his hand.
That's right.
We can't see his crystal.
It's been blinking for 16 years.
Well, that's interesting. So, Duncan, when you saw it, I mean, you're over 30, barely, now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so how did that strike you, seeing it now for the first time when you're over 30? Did it even hit you, or did you go like, oh, okay, whatever?
I think I kept expecting, well, I mean, keep in mind, I also came to this movie having seen several different post-apocalyptic, like, totalitarian society kind of things. This reminds me a lot, actually, of The Island. I didn't see the older one, but the most recent one with Ewan McGregor in them, mm-hmm, similar concept, like, different backstory, obviously, but you know, they tried to convince those people that it was in fact a post-apocalyptic thing, and like someone gets chosen by lottery to go to this great place, but really they were being used for spare parts. Essentially, they were clones of their real the people outside who had paid vast amounts of money.
So for us old people, that would be, it's basically Logan's Run meets Coma.
Yeah.
No, exactly. when you tally up, you know, films that tell environments and stories of society controlling itself, mm-hmm, for the quote-unquote ultimate good. You think of Soylent Green, very
right,
70s.
Right.
You know what they did there and how they went about it. And recently, The Village, if you, mm-hmm, look at that, what they do to control their society,
mm-hmm,
and to keep it safe,
right,
and running properly. And you
right
know. So if you were to tally up all the films that took, you know, different themes on this subject and talking about how society is regimented and controlled for its own good, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot more of that, of course, post 1950s, when that wasn't really part of the public consciousness to really kind of think about those societal concepts necessarily. I think the 60s really kind of started addressing those. And then, you know, you start seeing a lot, basically film starts getting more comfortable with that idea as a premise in the 70s, and then it just kind of goes on, and now it's just, you know, one you can choose.
Well, actually, it's interesting. Now, you know, I know this, but I'm seeing this a little differently now, is that this was part of what came with the 70s. Is you're right. It was the post-apocalyptic film, which had started in the early 60s, and it was all about the fear of the atomic bomb and all that kind of thing. You had definitely, like, bleaker ones, like On the Beach, but then, of course, Planet of the Apes, and then, of course, Soylent Green, Omega Man,
all post-apocalyptic,
Andromeda Strain on a smaller scale. Yeah. And so what this did is it married the shininess of the future with the post-apocalypse.
Right.
And I'm trying to think if there was anything else that had kind of really done that before. I mean, maybe they had, but I know this is like the one that stands out. It'd be interesting to go back. But that's kind of the trend that it was, and then it kind of led to other things, whereas Star Wars was not post-apocalyptic. Though, actually, in a tiny little way, what Star Wars was, in an interesting way, and we're going to get started in a second, is that it was a future, but that was dirty. It's a future that was retro already. So, in a way, that is in a kind of, because post-apocalyptica is a bit about how things are not progressing, but they have regressed, but still with touches of what the past was after a cataclysm. So it's not quite that, but Star Wars has that thing of, like, some things were good, but things are not as good. Everything's kind of shabby. But, wow, that looks stuff looks cool because we don't have it yet.
And that's really the way to classify it, is post-cataclysm, because you spoke Andromeda Strain or biological. That's Omega Man.
Yeah.
These are biological reasons for the fall of society in order to have to rebuild and have to live it and adapt in a different way post-event. And then there's nuclear. Then there's, you know, whatever the cause is, but you have a whole list of films that are society picking up the pieces due to whatever event that has to change in order to
That's more recent, that's less deep, Demolition Man. You guys remember that one? Sylvester Stallone and
what do you mean less deep?
Yes.
I love that film.
Sandra Bullock.
There's a lot. So I guess, going back, not to dodge your question about the age thing, I think my view of it was sort of like, okay, I'm just kind of going with the construct that they're presupposing, but I kept expecting there to be older people who are controlling it from the outside.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
oh,
that's what I kind of where my mind went.
But it was a Star Trek thing. It's the computer. You know, it's THX. It's like, Mother was still controlled by the humans back on Earth, whereas this is here. Literally, they're controlled by the idea is that they're controlled by the computer.
Right, but the computer was set
like
up.
Star Trek, which really kind of hammered that away a few times in the series.
HAL 9000
and THX. So, but HAL was in service to the humans.
But
he became sentient.
So was this computer. So was this computer.
I mean,
this was enforcing the strictures that they set up, even beyond the reasonable limit of the usefulness of those.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there are some Star Trek things that are more like that than
totally.
Than what we're talking
how many
about.
How many times did Kirk in the TV series blow up the computer that controlled the society?
Yeah,
right. That was a running theme. Yeah.
And then, now these were Star Trek writers.
George Clayton. I don't remember anymore. I've got the books over there. Actually, the book Logan's World. We have before us the sequel that was written by them called Logan's World, which is based in the world of the book. William F. Nolan was the main writer, and the other guy wrote, George Clayton Johnson. He wrote for Star Trek in the first season, so he wrote some good ones. I don't know if he wrote those things, but no.
So
that was the book they
sequel.
Wrote. This is a sequel that I think is called Logan's World, and William F. Nolan. Yes, and there was another one that I never got, or maybe I haven't. I can't find the Logan's Run book. I know I have it somewhere, but this was a sequel that William F. Nolan wrote after the movie came out, but he based it in his world, not the world of the movie.
Oh, how is this?
This says it's the mind-searing novel.
I read it, you know, I read it like 10, 20 years ago. I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, you might have to pick it up.
It's a book, or you can borrow it. And just briefly before we get started, of course, there was the TV series in 1977-78 with Gregory Harrison.
And Heather Menzies.
Heather Menzies and Donald Moffat as a robot. Yeah. Of course, you almost have to have a robot throw that in.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's future.
To point to others' humanity.
And Gregory Harrison has had interviews and gone on record saying that Star Wars destroyed the TV series Logan's Run.
Oh, really? Didn't know that.
Yeah. The film Logan's Run came out. They went to television, so they still had the bar of what digestible sci-fi was at that level. And then Star Wars came out while Logan's Run was on TV, the television show.
Yeah.
And that all is a game changer, and they canceled Logan's Run.
I remember the TV show, and I got to tell you, I wasn't picky back then, and it wasn't good.
Yeah, it was.
But
it's just
like the Planet of the Apes series.
Well, exactly.
They're on the run. It was always on the run.
Exactly. We have to be on the run.
Which is Logan's Run, I understand, but every episode.
Yeah, exactly. There was just nowhere to take
the series. The Fugitive.
A chase thing.
In that regard. We should probably start the movie, but yeah, the series, The Fugitive? Or was it called something else?
No, The Fugitive. No, that's what it was.
I mean, he's always on the run.
He was always on the run, but he was being chased the whole time, and that was the whole concept of the thing, whereas the movie of the Logan's Run was not a chase, and they turned it into
a chase.
Planet of the Apes was
which
not,
is different
you know, the whole thing of moving on from town to town, whatever. I mean, just it's more of a, that's more
the
of a
Hulk.
Western trope.
The Hulk, right? Quantum Leap in a sort of reversed way.
Highway to Heaven. I mean, you know. I mean, we can keep on going with those. But Logan's Run is not that kind of film.
No.
If you want the essence of it is, you know, finding out who your true self is and finding out that you, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
It would be kind of a fun show to compare those TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Sure. Okay, we're going to get started. Mortimer, you ready?
Morty!
I don't really like Mortimer either, but we have a business deal, so it's cool.
Do you want to leave?
I don't know. I'm good.
Okay, fine. All right.
That's weird, because Mortimer was the one who gave you that soda.
And
I mean,
I'm pointing to Mortimer, and we're going to count down. 3, 2, 1, play. Play.
Or not.
Play. There we go. Play. All right. Mortimer's just like a little slow in the uptake. And so, of course, we have to start the film like Blade Runner, and we have to explain... what's going on.
Speaking of starting like another film, to me, this is quite similar to the introduction of Superman, 1978, of Krypton, the beginning scene. Because you start from far away, you come in closer and closer, and Jerry Goldsmith's score is pretty much exactly what John Williams does for the big crescendo and big buildup in the Krypton sequence.
And actually, I will almost compare this to
the domes.
I've said this before, and I will say it again. This is also like the beginning of Triumph of the Will. The Leni Riefenstahl film.
I'm not familiar.
I don't know that film.
You mean the one that she made for the Nazis? Did you guys go to film school?
Oh.
I actually didn't.
Man.
I hated those things.
Oh, come on. No, but basically the idea, and which he took the concept from, they do, you know, the idea is in a film you want to come down, essentially in olden times, back, you know, the idea was that the gods would come down to Earth and they would live the lives of men. And these were the stories. So the idea is you start up in the clouds and then you come down to Earth. So, and that's the idea.
Oh, you can definitely see the miniature work at hand with your depth of field.
Yes.
Those trees are going soft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was a really, I mean,
a little shaky.
I mean, I know you and I, Tim, you and I talked about this, that the miniature was like, I said, what the hell? But clearly it was a choice. I don't understand what the choice was, but it's clear that that's a model.
Well, but the barometer, I mean, what we saw at this time in 76 compared to the way that we see it now are two different contexts.
Well, here's the problem.
Because these are
lighted, you couldn't light the stage brightly enough and get the light to come out.
I just saw three wrinkles in the psych in the background.
Yeah.
This is Todd AO, but it's 35 millimeter.
Okay.
It was a cheaper Todd AO that they used for this sequence. Now, Jerry Goldsmith, in the first half of this film, he did an all-electronic score. Because it was a futuristic city. Once they get out of the dome, it goes organic and the symphony comes in.
Once
we go into the dome, it's electronics from here on out.
And that looks like a meat pounder over there, I'm just saying.
And as you were saying, I mean, it's a cool-looking city. And as you said, Tim, the water is what gives it away.
The water is the, yeah.
That looks like a neat little place that I can have my basement.
That's a little jacuzzi.
It reminds me of the fake metropolis that they had in Superman Returns.
But I remember this was very cool. I was oohing and aahing when I saw it in the theater.
Yes. And that,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, in a way, having it miniature kind of makes it a little cartoonish, which means you'd separate yourself. Okay. We were from it. Oh, look, there's the white crystal.
I like that how they start with that, though, on the baby. You're like, why does a baby have a crystal?
Introduces a jewel. That, and there it goes. And he's again. Red. That's
Michael
right.
York. I've always liked Michael York. He's so cool.
He was great in Three Musketeers and Four Musketeers.
He had a great career. Yeah. Actually, if you read his book, Accidentally on Purpose, it's a wonderful autobiography, and he has a gift of the English language. The guy's book is awesome. I recommend it.
He is a brilliant actor.
Now, Richard Jordan, he died young, didn't he?
He did. He was a great actor, too. He came to fame in around this time, I think it's 75, on TV. He was in this miniseries called Captains and the Kings, and he killed it. He was great, and I think that's why he got this. But he died sometime in the 80s. Yeah, it was unfortunate.
He died young.
He's really
He was in the Yakuza, right?
Oh, really?
Pollock, I think.
Oh, wow. Maybe that's... Well, then that was before. That was early 70s. And he did a few things. He was in The Mean Season. I think he played the bad guy, the serial killer, which was with Kurt Russell and Mariel Hemingway. Oh, my God.
Now, I worked with the security officer who guarded this miniature set in MGM.
No way.
His name was Jerry Weaver.
Yes.
So, Jerry Weaver, awesome. Shout out to you. Thank you for guarding this miniature.
Nice. Way to go, Jerry.
Now, and of course, I mean, with the costumes, I always found it interesting that, you know, the reds are red, and then the kids are yellow. I was always trying to figure out what the separations are. So you've got yellow, you got green, and you got red, and what the ages were.
And here's our mall in Dallas, Texas, or wherever it was they shot this. Before the mall opened, they had access to this place.
And clever. And here, of course, he's explaining the philosophy of
carousel.
Of one goes, you know, one is born, one leaves, and of course they have the hand in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the hand. Very ominous.
Wow, those 70s costumes. Oh, goodness.
Well, they're pretty skimpy there. Can't argue.
And so these extras had work for months in Texas.
Yeah.
Where they shot this at.
So now this is interesting, the idea that here they are Sandmen, essentially policemen, and if you know, the idea is if you run, they will come after you. And
why do they call them Sandmen?
How they have privilege. Because they put you to sleep.
Right,
you
know, permanently.
They retire you, exactly, permanently. You know, it's that futuristic, oh, we call them Sandmen because you're going to sleep kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
There are a lot of words in this, by the way, that I have associations with that probably wouldn't have existed necessarily in the 70s.
Oh.
How big were arcades as far as, like, video games or pinball arcades when this came out?
Oh, no.
Big?
They weren't high-tech like they are now, but arcades were, very common and very...
Right.
Popular?
Yeah, there's arcade. There's, of course, carousel. Whenever you say
carousel. Like, I think
carousel.
Of a happy little, like, brightly painted, like, you
not
know, after furniture days, thing.
Mary Poppins carousel.
Yeah, now, of course, here what they do is they give you the year, but then also they said whatever, Capricorn 15S. So it's like, you know, essentially I guess they're going by the horoscope now instead of the calendar.
Nice long shot.
That's a nice lens there.
Now, of course, the horoscopes are all different now.
No, I'm not buying into that. That's
crap.
May I say...
I'm not a Taurus anymore.
May I say that I love this carousel sequence. It may not have been executed to its full potential, but I think the idea... I hate that strobing when they're going into the seats right there.
That's because that's actually two plates. You got foreground, you got background. I think that's what it is.
In any case, but the sequence itself, this blew me away in the theater. This carousel sequence, I think, is just a wonderful nugget that they came up with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's an optical effect where there were two elements they were putting together in a longer shot, and I think that's why they had the problem there.
The 70s lack of bra use is just entertaining.
Well, I don't think it's 70s. I think it's Logan's Run lack of bra use.
Lack of under support garments.
I like the hair. Fair
which
hair.
Which really is a comment on the society. This is a hedonistic society.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Where there's no limitations.
And that's the thing, is that the point is to be hedonistic, so you live and then
it's
and then you die.
Quality over quantity.
Well, the thing
is, you're going to pack everything in and do everything to its hilt, to the full hilt, and then die young.
See, I have an argument with that.
Leaving a pretty corpse.
If everyone's a hedonist, then who's doing the work?
Well, they're served by the servo machines.
Well, then why even live? I don't know. It's like there's a missing part in
there. They're cool questions that this film brings up, I think, which are nice little sci-fi core topics to talk about. You know?
Right. I mean,
well, 30 seems kind of tops as far as our society right now, but there is sort of a zone where your perspective doesn't go beyond what makes you feel good, you know, what you're doing that's fun and all that, where you start thinking about the bigger issues in life. But maybe in a society where there aren't really other things that distract you, maybe 30 is where they're like, oh, they're going to start thinking about this pretty soon. So
I think this would be good to poll two different demographics, younger age people, to say if you could have anything you want, live till 30 and then you're done, and then poll the same question, you know, the older people, and say if you go back and do that. And you'll see two different sets of answers. When you're young, you don't have any foresight.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
To think beyond that. You say, if I could party and do everything I want and have anything I wanted till I'm 30, wow, 30 is so far away. Sure, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, but the idea is here, these people are turning 30, so now they're going to carousel. But even within that, what they've done is they've couched the whole thing in the idea that you can be renewed. That's why you do carousel. And, of course, they have their white robes and the freaky hockey masks, and they think they're going to pull off the robes and be all in red in a second and do their gymnastics.
Yeah, they're going to do Liza with a Z costume.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Nice. It makes me wonder if they're about to ice skate.
And then they're all worshiping the big red crystal.
Look at the rotoscoping with the girl standing up, clapping her hands. Look at her hair. The rotoscoping of the optical effect.
Oh, yeah. In fact, don't look at it. Don't look at the magic.
Anyway, but now we have our really cool wire work.
Look at it now.
Which is.
The wire work with all these people is excellent.
Now, the interesting thing is that they're worshiping the red crystal. It's not the yellow crystal, not the green crystal. Mm. It's all the red ones. In other words, and everything is in red.
Ooh, I like the wires.
There's your wires and Blu-ray.
That's your Blu-ray that's giving it. But the idea is that, you understand where I'm getting at, is that basically it's not about, in other words, they tell you that they're making you think that reaching this, your red crystal, when it flashes, is
the good thing.
That
it's
is
the ultimate
duty.
Good thing.
It's the ultimate good thing. So you go towards the red crystal, you live your life, and then you go into carousel, and if you're renewed, you're renewed. If you're not, you go. You know, but that's the whole thing.
Mind conditioning. What they've done is the people and whatever entities in charge to do this, come up with this, have taken the ultimate negative to what the public would perceive and turn it to the ultimate positive through perception.
With the promise that you will have essentially reincarnation.
Right.
I'm not dissing or anything, but eternal life. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. You know, you will be resurrected in a way.
Renewed, so you come back and pick up right where you left off and do it all over again.
Right. Get to live your life again.
Is that what it is? It's suggesting that when you get renewed, you come back as a baby.
You come back as a baby,
right.
Yes.
Really you can't tell in this particular ceremony whether anybody wins.
So what it is the ultimate green conditioning to recycle.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Now,
just recycle your life.
For some reason, I wonder, why is there not meat falling on the audience?
Because they're, I don't know. Because
the beam, that optical effect of the beam around the...
It's an incineration. It's disintegration. It's like Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Everything's like Star Trek.
Yeah.
This was very intense, though. When I was 11 years old, watching this, it was very intense.
Even at 14. Did he have a tongue ring?
He has a tongue ring.
Who did?
Wait. This was 1976. It was Richard Jordan.
He had a pierced tongue.
He had a pierced tongue in 76.
Who did? One of
Richard
the
Jordan.
Audience?
Richard Jordan.
Wait, which one's Richard Jordan again?
Not Logan. Logan's the friend. Other, one.
Yeah,
the
other. That's Logan. Him. This is... Yeah, he's got something in his mouth.
I swear, that's weird.
I saw the same thing.
I know, I'm like... Freaky.
This
mall, by the way, is wonderful.
And this is a real place in somewhere in Dallas.
You know, I want to say something, though,
or
about
was.
The whole...
I'm sure it's gone by now. Look at that stucco wall. Ugh,
yeah, that's great.
Oh, the 70s.
The whole hedonism thing. Like, I didn't see anybody being hedonistic. I saw people just kind of hanging around talking.
Well, we haven't seen the hedonistic side, but the idea is that they do live... I mean, we get to see that later when you see the sex shop and you see the new shop. Mm. It's all about enjoying yourself. There's no... You're not
being
working.
Beautiful, you're, being... Being beautiful and
self-indulgent.
Pleasure.
It's all about self-indulgence.
What's about narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he standing there? he's shooting.
I love the spark plates in the floor. It was a little...
Now, these are your particle disturbance guns, or what do you call them?
Particle weapon. Basically, you could call our guns that we know a particle weapon because you're firing a particle of something at a high velocity, right?
Right.
But the real, futuristic thing is like a accelerated particle weapon that's like maybe magnetically accelererated. It's commonly called a rail gun.
A rail basically gun shoots a projectile, though.
That's what I'm saying. A projectile particle, like a physical thing, as opposed to like an intense beam of energy, in the form of a laser or something else.
And this was a little different from what there was. You had the laser beams from Star Trek, and they found a different way of doing it, exactly. Now, one thing I want to talk about is I'm kind of, they're taking particularly... awful glee in teasing this guy and
incredibly
really sadistic.
It is sadistic. They could have
just shot. Sandmen are sadists basically in their work.
Basically, yes. They're enjoying the fact that the runners are running, so therefore they're a criminal, and therefore I'm going to make you suffer before I kill you, and this is what I'm going to do.
I hadn't thought of that, but if they're basically formulating Sandmen, like authorizing specific infants to be Sandmen from the beginning, then it must be something to do with a psych profile kind of thing, where in a hedonistic society, what they enjoy is the suffering of others and looking for opportunities to do that.
Interesting.
It's another form of control, though.
Well,
it's sort of taking that the ones that have that psychological profile and you know, giving them what they enjoy so they don't even think about, hey, what's behind this? You know, it's just like, oh, yay, fun. Let's go torture someone.
Now, here we are. We're 15 minutes, 13 minutes in, and we have plot point number one. That's where he finds the little object.
It's called Ankh, right?
It's called an Ankh.
Yeah, exactly.
A-N-N-K.
And interesting, so now he stumbles. He literally stumbles into this thing. He's the one. It could have been anyone. It could have been it could have been Richard Jordan. What's his name again?
I forget his character name.
Exactly.
No, but Logan.
Francis,
that's right.
And then these guys come along, like, for me, this was so cool. They come along and they do the thing.
They dissolve him. They do chemicals and it dissolves him. There's some wire work with that. It's real practical.
But it's really
right
good.
There.
But I mean, but also it goes to the point of, I mean, I'm stretching it a bit, but basically there's no veneration for the body.
Right. It's just kind of, something
the body's expendable.
Disposed of.
You just dispose of the body.
Ooh, that's creepy when you're
It was very
younger.
Creepy. Oh, that was very disgusting. And then it's all gone. And now we're into
his caftan, 70s. This is Halston did this scene.
He's got a cool pad. Let me tell you, man.
It's a very cool pad.
I like
you
his
may
glass.
Want one like that. Now.
I know he's got the tall shot glass.
The way these electronic things work freaks me out.
Oh, well, this is they call it the circuit. So
right,
yeah. So you know, it's teleportation. Actually, when you think about it. this is teleportation technology. So this is Star Trekian. See, it's all taking it. And this actually is important. Like, this is like, oh, it's like, hey, buddy.
Hey,
like,
sailor.
You know, I'm sorry, not you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But the thing is that Star Trek actually opened the door for many things, including a lot of the technologies here. They changed the idea of the phaser, the idea of teleportation, the whole idea of the computer.
Look what she has on her neck.
And look what
she doesn't have on her hips.
I love
her clothing.
I love her hip. Let me tell you,
Serge is into hips.
I was into the hip at 14. I was like, oh my god.
Could this movie been the one that sort of got you into that?
I would say
so. Is that far back?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I'm like, dang. I'm sorry. I'm. Oh, holy crap.
She barely has anything on. She beats out Princess Leia in the.
In the slave outfit. Kills Princess Leia in the slave outfit. Mm-hmm. Princess Leia in the slave outfit was still virginal.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm sorry. Totally.
Could you elaborate?
What? It's like you knew, you just knew. It's just like, hands off, buddy.
You don't know what Jabba did to her. While he was putting the bikini on her.
He's right. You
know,
don't.
We're going to have to save that
for
the
other people
we're,
in the.
We're going to save that for the Return of the Jedi commentary.
Okay. I guess.
I like how he just jumps to this. Oh, you prefer women. It's like, he's just like, let's go. Which is interesting. Once again,
I was totally lost during this scene when I was 11 years old watching.
Well, but this was.
I was like, what is going on?
But this was an extension of basically the sexual mores of the 70s and how everything had really loosened up. So, I mean, he just basically took where it was and just went, okay, let's throw it 200 years later, and it's just kind of really accelerated. And once again, it goes into the whole hedonistic thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there's only so many people available, I would think. After a time, you'd run across the same person beaming into your place. You know what I mean? Instead of different person each time, try to choose.
Well, there are three don't. Well, you know what? If you're doing it every night, sure. Five times a night, every night, you're gonna hit everyone at some point.
I mean, if they used it like people today use the internet, I mean.
Well, you know, it wouldn't have been that kind of thing. Like, you'd think there'd be some sort of, like, you know, catalog.
I like that.
Or something, right? Unless they just don't care.
That was a bad cut.
Yeah, it's just roulette.
I like he just says, let's have sex.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, and then here she's, of course, well, I'm about more than that. Did she play this whole scene bottomless? I'm sorry to bring this up, but really. I mean,
this one she did, yeah.
I don't know. Let's see if her hip is. And I'm just wondering, as an actress, if she had to. Or I think at some point they changed it so they could put something on her. It's just. Nope. Wow.
Don't know.
Well, closed set, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm. And I hope it was warm.
Right?
Maybe it was warm.
There's like five people behind the camera.
Now, what did she. She had done, I think, Walkabout before
Walkabout.
This, and she was great in that.
Was one of the most prominent things she was in.
Maybe a dumb question, but was that an Australian film?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good film, or early 70s.
Good John Barry score to that film. And then American Werewolf in London was not too long after
that's
this.
Right, she did
that. That was kind of it for her sci-fi appearance.
He had just come off of the Three and Four Musketeers, Michael York had, and he was, I mean, that was it's a Richard Lester version, and I don't know if y'all have heard about it, but you should definitely find it because, I mean, maybe it's because I grew up during that time and saw it, but I think it's still the best Three Musketeers films.
Oh, I've seen
that. Yeah. And you know, the whole brouhaha over the Musketeers was they made one big, large, epic film, and the producers, without the actors' knowledge or consent, distributed it as two separate films.
Mm-hmm.
Or they shot enough to make two films out of it, but they didn't tell anyone when they were making it.
So they only and paid so, them for one, basically.
Correct. And they released one summer and then one the next year, two different event films. And the actors are so pissed that that put a contract into effect that they could never be exploited that way again after the Musketeers.
Yeah, of course, which they did with Superman and Superman 2 again.
Mm. Well, were the actors hosed on that too?
And the Salkins.
The Salkins are the same people.
Associated with all those.
That's right. It was the Salkins who did
producers.
That again. Oh, here we go. So here's Francis who comes in with. He comes not in with one, but two. So he didn't go to the circuit. He just found them off the street.
Sure.
And I'm like, and she's just like, I'm out of here.
Automatic door.
I want a door like that that opens and closes. I like this. What is this? Like,
oh, this is their party drug.
This is their ecstasy bomb. That's right.
Give me my screamer.
I like the fact that it sounds like shattering glass.
I know.
It's like, that's raining down on us now. Don't worry
How
about
fun.
That.
The party started.
Now, that is a nice, I mean, that's a nice shot. I think there was a matte painting, but it was good. So, and now, of course, they set up Ankh. Now, the Ankh thing, which he knows that she has. And now, of course, we're set up with the cathedral for when we hit the cathedral later. So they planted that right there. And, of course, he's set up New You. We've seen New You twice. Mm-hmm. One, the guy is that, and he's repairing that. So they're
reinforcing
where they're going.
I think New You was pretty prophetic. I mean,
oh, yeah.
With what you have now between Botox, plastic surgery, and the state-of-the-art, it's pretty close.
That's a cool shot, by the way, the whole reflection on the ceiling thing, sort of disorienting.
Well,
almost makes you feel like gravity is different in that part.
But also it's very 70s.
well, I wouldn't know.
Now, it's interesting that he kept, well, he... I know.
Great set, by the way.
Trust me. It is a great set. A great set.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I mean, the design actually is really cool. It's like it's a kind of like a Ken Adam motif,
it's
kind of.
Spare, but nice reflective surfaces.
Slanted,
angled,
big, huge angled
depth.
Ceilings.
It's a budget Ken Adam.
Now, why did they wait? Why did they wait till the next day to bring their things?
Their stuff?
Yeah, their stuff. Now, see, I like this.
You would think procedure would... not be that way.
See, I like this. Identify. So basically, the crystal in your hand identifies you, and the computer, once again, it's the computer with a woman's voice.
With a light mother woman's voice.
Okay, very light. Yes, exactly.
It's just like an alien.
Oh, here we go. I remember seeing the graphic depiction of a runner. So we're getting the idea there's more. I mean, just in terms of the storytelling, they're definitely filling out the world without having to show us everything, which is really nice. And this is great. You know, he's walking away, and they pass. And this, of course, sets up for the end, for the shots at the end. See you in the hydrotoner?
The bath?
And they couldn't just say jacuzzi.
Right? Yeah.
It's a hydrotoner in 2274. And so now, of course, it comes back down. And now this is where the movie kicks into its next gear.
Yep, they got plans for Logan.
Yeah. And, of course, it's just blank. It's like, oh, this is bad.
It's nice that they let this much time go by.
Because the computer really
needs to make you uneasy.
The computer needs that long to think. It's
I like that.
It's like Word Perfect. Please wait. Please wait.
Now, Michael Anderson directed this, right?
Yes.
Who had directed If before this, and several, he was a British director.
Well, a big thing was Around the World in 80 Days. He directed that, but he got overshadowed by Mike Todd, who was a producer of that, and became a Mike Todd production, and everyone only talked about Mike Todd, and no one even talked about Michael Anderson's contribution to that incredible logistics that had to come together to make that film.
Didn't it win Best Picture that year?
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah,
which a lot of people say were not happy about.
We're not happy about, yes. So I like how it's like, the computer says nothing. Ooh, blue white
identify.
Man just,
yeah,
it brings
just
out
just
the bad blue
me.
Screen.
Yeah, why'd they have to blue screen that? That's weird.
Because it's a screen. And
they didn't have a monitor at that time.
That's all.
Right. Not even like a rear projection kind of thing?
They should have, but I think money wise, they said we'll just do a optical.
And that normally wouldn't show up, but with, of course, Blu-rays bringing out all the possible imperfections. I mean, I can forgive it.
I wouldn't say it wouldn't show up. I remember when I saw this in the theater.
Oh, it did look
bad. I remember
bad.
You had sharp edges around people's heads and things that were
bad rotoscoping.
Yeah. It just was. The money wasn't there to go all out, I don't think, post-production-wise.
So here, of course, we're watching it. It's about the Ankh, and I'm like, oh, wow, it's about the Ankh. And, what's Sanctuary? And they're just dropping all these cool terms. Like,
Ankh you very much.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Very mysterious.
And now the thing is, he doesn't know. It's out of sound of his outside of his realm of understanding. For him, this world is what there is. And I think he even says that there's something else. See, he doesn't even understand.
It's kind of wonderful, and this is where we see his character really be flipped, but it's kind of a great moment.
Well, the interesting thing to
look at... I like this foundation. This is good.
Oh, absolutely. The interesting thing to look at, and just watch it, and we can talk about it more, is, in other words, he hears what the computer says, and then he's, you know, how committed is he to the mission, or is he actually running for himself? Because I think ultimately he does run for himself. At what point does he give that up? In other words, how long is he on the mission? Which I always found kind of interesting and always looked.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think he's not on the mission and he should be, you know, when you think he's on the mission and he really shouldn't be, he still is. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Look, he's just asked the question.
So there's not a cathartic moment. There's not a...
I think at some point there is. I think it's later... I think it's much, much later. I think, you know, and I'll point it out. I think it's when they're in the Capitol. I think that's when it does happen, and it finally triggers. And it took me a long time to figure that out. It's just like, but it just shows the cognitive dissonance. In other words, I still believe in what I've grown up with, and there's no letting it go because I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he doesn't know what the seals are.
Yeah, he's been conditioned.
It's like saying. Yeah, he says there's nothing.
And I love the the procedure number here.
033-03?
Yeah, it's like that means something.
I want to know what 033-02 is.
Yeah.
And so she gives him the mission now. We're 25 minutes, which is basically, well, this is the end of Act 1, clearly. Oh, that's right, he's a Red 6. He's still got, whatever, 4 years left to go.
So in the book, they only lived to how long?
21.
21.
It's been a while since I read the book.
Yeah, you really couldn't make a movie under those. it'd be like a teen film.
Yeah, I think the Ryan Gosling one is going to be 30 also, and I think that's what they said. But I think Michael York was older than 30 at this point, too. I believe. I could look it up on the inner tubes, but I'm not going to.
And it would be interesting to see if they reveal like what sort of like physiological changes they do to change the color, the fact that his thing is blinking.
That was always
cool. Because clearly they were suggesting he's feeling something going weird.
That's interesting. I never really thought of it that way. I thought they just changed his crystal.
Well, physiologically they could have done something.
Well, it depends on if the crystal senses a physiological state or if it's just purely a mechanical countdown timer.
A programmed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Am I still red? He asks.
Ooh, they took away his 4 years.
And the computer doesn't answer. I had 4 more years. And see, now it's like, buddy. And that's interesting.
Teaches you to read the contract before you sign.
Well, but that's the whole thing. He expected,
know what you're getting into.
But interestingly, he accepted the fact that if he got... through the 10 years of his red, then he'd be like, okay, fine, I go into carousel.
Yeah,
but now it's just
go.
Like, no, you're not getting them. And he's like, wait. So he expected has been taken away from him.
Well,
so
now, and he asked their question, is anyone renewed?
Well, you see, and he didn't get answered. So now he should be like, oh, crap, fuck.
He's been made
like,
a martyr.
I'm like, I hate this. Mm-hmm. Screw this. But instead, in other words, now is he on his own?
But
or is he still on the mission? That's what kind of confused me.
Right.
Why would he still be on the mission?
But basically, it's another form of control because now they've given him no choice. For everything he knows, he now knows that either he needs to go to carousel immediately or he's got to run because he'll be hunted.
Actually,
if he doesn't go to carousel.
I think I know what it is. I think in his mind, psychologically, I think, and which is never explained, that if he completes the mission, in other words, if he finds sanctuary and destroys it, they'll give him his 4 years
and
back.
And that's the question they didn't answer.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, yeah. Yeah. All right. Now it makes sense to me.
So internally, he has to process that for whatever it means to him. It could mean that.
Well, he's always...
He's thinking he'll get the 4 years back, or he has no choice and has to do this because they'll kill him otherwise.
So basically, he's got to realize... Once he realizes it's all a lie and he'll never get the 4 years back, that's when he knows it's all bullshit. And when he knows that it's all an artificial structure.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now he can't tell anyone. He's going to hide his hand. Now he's going to wear the glove. Meanwhile, you've got all these guys doing this tumbling in the background. Look at that.
Well, they're rehearsing for Can't Stop the Music.
They had to share stage space that day.
Was that Linda Blair?
No, I Can't Stop the Music was Valerie Perrine and
Valerie, oh my God.
Bruce Jenner and Steve Guttenberg and Nancy Walker directed that film.
Nancy Walker?
The directed Can't Stop the Music. We digress. Anyway.
Oh
yes.
My God. Nancy.
Nancy
wrote a,
Walker.
Wrote a Morgan Stern's mother?
Yes, directed Can't Stop
know,
the Music.
I didn't know
Go
she was
figure.
A director.
That really puts the 70s in perspective. That's all I can say for what those who had, didn't live the 70s. That really
Nancy
puts it in perspective.
Nancy Walker was a great character actress. Great. Yeah, that's it is. Now, Francis is an interesting character. It's like he doesn't listen and, you know, he's always like, he's a real believer. He's more of a believer than Logan.
Oh, yeah, he's been conditioned on a much greater scale.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, course, there's no changing
doubt.
It.
There's no doubt.
And I was always sad. When I first saw this, I was very sad that their friendship went the way it did in this film.
Which, and actually, you know, when it comes to friendships in movies, and usually they're kind of like, eh, this is actually one I believe. I truly, truly believe this friendship. You know, usually so, it's like a buddy and you know, it's like buddy or you don't get along or this or that. They're reluctant partners here. They get along.
Yeah.
They're different,
it's,
but they
it's
really
the cliche
get along.
Setup. I mean, it's the Ben-Hur. It's you know, Charlton Heston, Stephen Boyd.
Oh,
the
that's
beginning,
a good one, too.
And then that turns and they become the greatest of enemies.
That is a better relationship.
Know.
Yes. Well, that's a greater film, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Let me see. Logan's Run, Ben-Hur.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
That's like one half dozen of the other. I love the kid. Look at the leather couch. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but it looks like stacks of poo.
I don't know what they're eating, but...
Either that or design, cast though. Mold sandbags for like a miniature train set.
Can I tell you this? I mean, I understand these scenes are important, but these scenes in his place are kind of boring.
Well, for me, I'll say it right now, the most boring scene, and you know this one, Sarah, I talked to you about it already,
is
Washington, D.C., when they're sitting in there with all the cats.
Mm.
The film just grinds to a stop
for me. But
it's
got Peter Ustinov.
So everyone think of things to say for that moment when it comes up.
All right, okay.
Definitely.
I was just watching Jenny Agutter here, and I've been feeling it. She's like, well, do I trust him or do I not? You know, because the whole thing, it's, you know, oh, I'm with the underground. Do I believe you? So we have to go.
And I need to apologize for her, because most of my life I called her Jenny Agutter. Sorry.
Cool.
That's just the way
Doesn't
I read it.
Classy, but
that's the way
logical.
I read it.
She was in another film after this called The Eagle Has Landed, which I really liked. It was based on Jack
Sturgis,
Higgins.
Wasn't
Sturgis.
John
Sturgis. Loved John Sturgis, yeah. Who did The Great Escape, amongst many other. Oh, Magnificent
it was Michael
Seven.
Michael Caine. Robert Duvall.
Michael Caine. Yeah.
Wait, she changed
Robert
clothes.
Duvall. Larry Hagman in a small role.
So after the 70s, I mean, she fell off the radar.
Yeah, she,
much, right?
She did Eye of the Needle also with Donald Sutherland. Mm. Directed by Richard Marquand, who directed...
Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi.
Wait, after the 70s?
Oh. Jenny Agutter, I really didn't see her much.
Werewolf was 81.
Werewolf was 81.
That's true, but that's close at the end of the 70s.
So it's like, yeah, we don't believe this guy. We're going to kill him. Which we can understand. Now remember, this was basically 30 years after the end of the war. So there's still the idea of an underground...
Interesting.
You know, that fought against the tyrannical government that was basically occupying.
Okay, is it just me, or does that lady look like she's 40?
She's past 30 in your eye?
She's past a lot of these people.
Look at her
are,
neck, and it looks like she's wearing a wig, too.
Oh.
Maybe she is.
No, I think that's the way the hairs were done back in the 70s. The 70s were pretty bad, I gotta tell you. It was tough. Thing I hate the most about the 70s, corduroy pants. Man, I will never wear corduroy ever again, but that's just me.
Orange carpets, avocado green
now.
Walls,
the wallpaper,
not a fan.
Ugh.
The Brady Bunch kitchen.
See, this is so much better. This is like a future with only 70s kind of tinged futuristic designs for costumes. And some design the wall
Michael
art.
York's lair is really 70s.
Kind of It doesn't have the bad wallpaper.
Were poo couches popular then?
So, yes.
They're all the rage.
They're all the rage, exactly. So,
that,
I mean,
and Gia Pets.
You know, so this basically, you know, it's wending its way. He's working his way through this, through the plot. And, you know, is he... So that's the thing. Is he on the mission or not? That's where I was kind of like, hmm. But I also felt that he was on the mission, but like, why? That's my confusion.
So I've never seen A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, wow.
Is that another society thing that would fall into this category?
Feels almost post-apocalyptic, but I don't think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of in the future, but it's definitely... There's a lot of violence.
But I mean, is it a societal degradation thing?
No.
Not really. No, it's dealing with a future where there's a lot of what they call ultra-violence. Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's just like an imagination of the downward progression of society, but no event has happened.
Okay, then.
Right. So I like how he just takes off, and he's just like, oh, we got to go this way. So he's avoided being assassinated. So I don't like how they just pull her out.
Mm-hmm. Right?
She had underwear on.
Right? She was wearing a diaper.
I think they all did. Now, these were cool. I mean, obviously, that's a painting over
there. And here's our miniature. They're in the little car. Shiny. In that little car in their little tube.
But it's cool having, you know, the monorail system with the cars. That looks like actually like Disney World, that whole design.
Tomorrowland. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is what they wanted Tomorrowland to look like.
The hotel. Mm.
Disney World. Oh, the Cubs. So we're going to see Billy. Billy is actually played by Gary, a friend of mine.
Do you know Gary?
Yeah.
I know Gary. I met him at a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's a small place here in L.A. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to see Billy.
That's right.
Gary and I were just in a short film in January.
Oh, really? Oh, because Gary knows Jim, right?
No, Frank.
Who did it? Frank.
He knows Frank. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Actually, because I met him and his daughter actually at a party, and she's a contortionist, actually. Yes, Tim.
I just have to say this. Yes, they're probably never going to show it again. It happened twice, and you're never mind.
Well, no, go ahead.
It's a shot that is a really bad degradation due to the blue screen above Michael York's head as you were looking towards Jenny Agutter in two separate cuts.
I saw that.
Let alone the outline around their heads. Shocking. There was a spot in the car that was just really bad.
Nah.
And post-production, I'm really surprised some of this stuff got through.
Well, some of those plates there. I don't know. I can buy it. But that's a really cool shot.
I like the reflections. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, it's like 50 feet of tunnel that they used.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question. What keeps the Cubs from running down that tube, even if they can't catch a car?
Because they're locked in there. They can't get out. They're in Cathedral. So the quadrant's locked off.
Well, little babies could be shoved through there. But they die, I guess. I guess I didn't think that went through. Sorry.
Put the babies out there.
All right. Well, let's take this
now
up a notch.
Now you're free. You're free. Stop crying. You're free.
It had logic when I first opened my mouth, but when I finished the sentence, it fell apart.
But once that's okay. We still love you.
Now, once again, what we're seeing is like the outskirts of the society. In other words, it's not perfect. There's a place where imperfect people go, and of course, it's abandoned. You have vines, and actually, it's dead vines growing, not even live vines. Mm-hmm. And it's all overgrown and a dangerous place.
Interesting.
It's like the bad side of town.
That area, they give it a name that we normally associate with a religious, like holy structure.
Mm. Oh, that is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cathedral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because living till 30 is a new religion,
mm-hmm.
basically. But hedonism, and that's the whole thing. I mean, if you want to talk about that, I don't think there's any suggestion that there is any other kind of religion of any sort.
No, yeah, I don't think they. I mean, if it's a hedonistic society, then I don't know. Religious constructs might not have been that useful to build that. Certain ones, maybe. I think Carousel is their god, sort of.
Well, yeah, because you
I
have,
mean, it's
you
their
have,
afterlife.
You have the jewel.
Their
that's
beliefs,
right.
Like that's the jewel and like all that. It's tangible mixed with intangible, semi-supernatural stuff, you know, so makes sense.
In theory, yes, exactly.
I mean, that's really all the religion you'd need if you were really like focusing on building a hedonistic society, right?
This dangerous place without any power is really overlit.
I like the I like the Christmas colors.
Hey, Ernest Laszlo shot this. Come on. Don't diss on Ernest.
The beautiful, stainless ash cans and table bases.
Well, they've been here they were just moved in. They went shopping in IKEA.
They have electromagnetic generators that keep dust off.
So why is it when he yells runner, she shows up? It's like, don't move.
So now here we have the Lost Boys.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah. It's funny because when I met him and he told me what he did, I'm like, okay, now
there
I
is.
See. Yeah, there's Billy. It's funny to see someone, you know, he's immortalized in film, and to see him now, you know, how he's changed. Yep.
Yeah, very Lost Boys. That's a good analogy.
Or Lord of the Flies.
Well, because, right? and notice it, I mean, they're all young. They're all essentially yellows, if not young greens. Hmm. So what, do they recruit each other? How do they escape? I mean, it's interesting, you know, actually, this is very
that
interesting.
Was the prequel. That's what it would have been the next movie, is explaining all this. You know? Could have had their story.
You know, how do they, in other words, how do they, well, it's kind of, it's a fragment of, they say, well, how do they get there? I don't know if they necessarily worked out why they're there, other than they are there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't make any sense.
I don't think it went that deep into it.
You know, this reminds me of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you know, with all the kids hiding, you know, essentially hiding underneath the castle. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I like all these new expressions like muscle, and it's some kind of steroid or gas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, this is like Miri. See, this is like Star Trek again.
Yeah.
Remember Miri? Mm-hmm. This is Miri. Mm-hmm. This owes so much to Star Trek. But it's okay. It recombined it very well. It really did.
Those flames would have looked much better if the set were darker.
Yeah, good point.
See, I know someone who worked on the guns, and I'm trying to remember. It was years ago that I talked to him, but they were, you know, propane.
That was not an optical effect. That was
These were all practical, and that's what's great.
Yeah,
practical.
It's a very cool looking.
I liked
effect.
It. That was cool.
That was a lame.
Yeah,
shot.
That was girly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, see you, Billy. Yeah. And I like the guitar. Whatever
that
violin,
was a cello.
The cello. He goes.
You know, I'm actually not convinced now that I think about it, yes. Given what happens when you hit something with the weapon, that it's particle-based for sure. Because that whole burning thing kind of does suggest more of an energy weapon.
Or maybe it's some kind of...
I like to philosophize about these things.
Maybe it's like I think about that a lot.
Maybe it's like a flare...
I do, Jim, so suck it.
Maybe it's a flare pellet of some sort, because it has the qualities of a flare.
Could
of
be.
Some sort.
It's weird though. You didn't even actually see a result on the one guy that we've seen get shot with one of those. You didn't actually see like what it did to
Who's
him.
Who's this? She's very pretty.
She's a runner. Pretty. Now is she 30? No, she looks like she's just about 30.
She looks like she could be related to what's her
eyelashes.
Name that played Lois Lane in the first Superman?
Margot Kidder.
Yeah,
she looked like a little bit like Beth Howland to me, who played Vera on the old Alice TV show.
Holy crap!
Yeah, how's that for?
Yikes!
Obscure.
Yeah, you're not a green. I'm sorry.
But the thing about like the gun, when you bring things like this up, they present things, but they don't do it with any depth to explain their identity or how they work. And to me, that's sort of lazy.
Well, I didn't need the explanation for the gun.
I don't.
Other things maybe, but the gun's not bothering
me. I think
me.
Overall in this film, though it's a pattern.
There is a lack of explanation for some things, like how the kids are in a cathedral. Yes.
There's a lack of depth things.
Well,
a lack in having worked it out. The gun, for me, is fine.
It's honestly. A fine line, though, when you're doing science fiction, between how much you stop to explain and how.
I don't
because
need to be
you can't always
everything.
Do it with exposition, right? But and how much you leave to the imagination. Like, there's an art to that.
But I
agree.
I think for the
time... To me, they're erring in the underdeveloped.
I would like to have heard more about that
I think
in passing.
For the time, I think they did rather well. Mm-hmm. They did much better than a lot of other films, I gotta say.
It's definitely a very original...
Oh, man. And you see
there's an effect.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely a very original weapon. Like you didn't really see that. You either saw a laser beam or you saw like a bang, and this is kind of somewhere in between. I like that. It's creative.
I mean, you don't see the trajectory. You see the gun. I mean, I don't know if it's realistic, but I bought it. I did. It didn't bother me.
Yeah.
This is a nice shot.
The
great shot.
Nice scope shot. The delay, though, when you watch like the beginning sequence of York, the first runner in the shopping mall, the delay between him firing the gun and the actual effect of the sparks going off is horrendously long.
Yeah, but and you'd think
that
you
was,
might be able to see something flying.
That was the editing.
Yeah, that could just be editing.
That was the editing. They messed it up.
Tighten that up and it would have been fine.
Exactly.
Not necessarily. It was like in a master shot and you see him fire it in the same shot, then the sparks go off, and it was just a delay in the timing.
And it's pretty consistent delay, like they show a lot.
In this shot, I liked how they did is they had the three holes and they had them, you know, him in the left hole and her in the right hole with the middle hole.
Then he kind of takes up the center.
And he goes into the center and then she basically leaves him in the center. I mean, that's a really... nicely constructed mise en scène.
It was a nice choice. Very nice. It could have been more drab. They opted for a classier way to do it.
Which is kind of a little bit of what was done. It's done less now, but like in the 60s and sometimes in the 70s, they were doing that shooting through architecture.
Douglas Sirk was incredibly known for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was one of his trademarks, props and sets for that.
Well, Hitchcock used to do a lot of foreground stuff. Like, he'd stick a lamp right in the foreground, out of focus. A lot of moving around, stuff like that, to give it depth.
Mm-hmm. Which he uses a lot in Dial M for Murder, which was shot in 3D.
Right. So there it was, very intentional. So now they're following. Now, it's like a detective story that he's following. So now they're going to the new U shop. Oh, they followed him.
Wow, I'm surprised two of them could fit back there.
This was cool.
Ah, here comes Farrah.
Ooh, look at that. That's a nice set with all the blue neon. And there's Farrah Fawcett.
It definitely gives the impression of a salon.
She'd already done Charlie's Angels. She was in the midst of that.
I think this she did this right before Charlie's Angels, I think. 76 was in
I think it was right around the same time.
I think she did this, though. It was right before. I mean, just before, I think. And she was Farrah Fawcett Majors when she did this.
Right, because she was married to Lee Majors, the $6 million man. No, keep on going. Keep on changing this.
And this is what they do when people have plastic surgery. They have screens like that, and they show you. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
You know,
now, ahead of its time.
Now this guy
who is that actor?
Who is that actor?
Who could it be?
Tell me who this actor is.
Something Anderson, I believe.
Michael Anderson Jr.
Who is the son
of the director?
The director.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, so here the implication. I never really thought of this. He basically keeps on making himself over to look younger.
Yeah.
So he doesn't look like he's, close to 30. Which is so old.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I like the Escapulator Mark III.
Escapulator. It sounds like an automatic, execution device.
But I like the levers,
Look at those.
Anodyne and Kinesis? Or Kinesis?
Do you know what's funny? That top part of that device actually looks like something they just came up with to do prostate cancer surgery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not kidding.
Do I want to know how you
Well, I hope those devices work better than this one in the movie.
A close relative had to have that, and they were showing me online what device was going to be used.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And may I say that the black used in the set, to me, is just a cop-out, budget-wise.
Mm, yes.
It's very Irwin Allen. It's very television of the 60s, that Irwin Allen production.
It's very
You don't have enough money to build a set, so just drape it in black.
It's very Time Tunnel.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
They could have made this set kick ass, and instead, they dropped the ball.
They made the vestibule kick ass with the blue neon and the white.
It doesn't
bother
me.
It just shows budget.
I like the care that Farrah Fawcett takes with him. Like, she's not very good in this, but she looks pretty, and she kind of takes.
Well, she's definitely flirty. She's definitely flirty with him.
You were saying, see.
You know what this set reminds me of is Magneto's prison in the first two X-Men films, the plastic prison, because there was a lot of black in that and the walls and everything apart from the actual contained space and then the bridge over to the door.
Well, you do know that Bryan Singer was in line to do the Logan's Run remake for a while.
No, I didn't.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he's one of many directors who bailed. Hmm. And now it's on track with Ryan Gosling with a script written by Alex Garland, who did 28 Days Later, and some other director who I don't know. Hmm.
And Michael Anderson's costume, I think, is the same fabric that Irwin Allen's costume designer, Paul Zastavnevich, is his name, from Lost in Space, Time Tunnel, Land of the Giants. Look at that glittery.
That's the future. I think
that's
you're
a futuristic
right.
material.
That's Lost in Space.
Yeah, but look at the numbers on the thing, the anodyne kinesis machine. It's like the numbers that flipped. It's not even digital.
Oh,
and I like how he gets the phone call right as he's in there. Oh, yes.
It's a cordless phone, though. That's prophetic.
That is futuristic.
Nice call.
I'll take care of it now.
So to speak. Nice call on the cell phone, I should say.
He does a really good, for his small part, he does a really good job being a bad guy.
He's not subtle. This is not a subtle performance.
No, he definitely comes across as a...
Well, he's got to get in and get out, There's no time to waste. And I like how the numbers are just kind of going up and down. Right? What does 82927 mean? Really? Or is it just throw numbers up there? So that's the sense of where they didn't think through what the technology was. Let's just have blinking lights and all that kind of thing. Uh-oh, this would be really bad if I pulled the anodyne switch.
I remember I was sad for Farrah in this scene.
I was very sad.
Wait, why did the bed just bleed?
The styrofoam that he's laying in bled?
The visual I have to say, the visual effects here, I know it's L.B. Abbott. I like how the women are fighting.
Oh, these opticals are bad.
The opticals are... That was a freeze. That was a really cool
freeze
ray.
A freeze ray. Neat.
But here, I mean, I got the idea, but just the...
That's overkill with the opticals.
Yeah, the opticals. And actually, we have the same thing when with Box in a little while.
Yeah, yes.
And it's just like, I mean, you get the idea. This is horrible. I was horrified with this.
And Farrah's out of a job.
Right.
Oh, this is awful. Well, I hope when they redo it, they can... Of course, Francis is there. What the hell? He's the thing that doesn't go away. I've got my mission. Leave me alone. So actually, you know, in terms of structure, Francis becomes the antagonist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He keeps Logan from accomplishing his mission.
Duncan mentioned the fugitive, and really you've got, you know, David Jansen is Michael York, and Francis is Victor Morse.
Barry Morse.
Barry Morse,
who was on Space 1999.
Yes, Victor Bergman. Got Victor and Barry mixed up there.
Oh, they're going through the love shop.
They're going to the love shop.
And the love shop actually had a longer sequence, but they edited it out because it was a little dirtier.
It was too sexy.
Wow, really?
It was too sexy for the
70s. Well, I'm surprised they don't have a modern version.
Richard Jordan is, I mean, Francis is horrified by what he sees. And it's interesting because now he thinks that, you know, basically Logan's gone crazy and he has to get him now. Oh, here. Mm-hmm. Okay, my favorite moment in this.
Oh, yes.
Wait, hang on. Where is it? This guy's just standing there and go.
Oh yeah!
It's awful. I'm almost like
you can almost hear the AD saying, "And walk,
now! Why weren't you going earlier?" And okay, we're just going with it. Why did they pick that take? They probably had one good take, and that's it.
Yeah, because that guy was a screw up.
That's
likely.
One of my
He's
bones
probably related
to pick
to
with
somebody.
This film.
That's a horrible mistake.
Oh, that was awful. And now they're going into, and now of course everything slows down. Yeah, well, if we could pause this and run it slower, do this on your own, people.
I like
but
this song.
There are a lot of naked people in this scene.
I call digital love.
Guys and girls. Those guys are all naked. Everyone's naked.
So you don't necessarily need to have them come to your house if you want to walk into the love tunnel.
The sex shop. Yeah, actually, it is the love tunnel. The tunnel of love. Oh, my God. Could you imagine that set? Okay, we need 100 extras, and you're all going to be naked.
In L.A., very
easy. Of course,
in
the 70s.
In the 70s.
In the San Fernando Valley, right. It happens all the time.
Right? It's like you just wander into the wrong place and you could run into that.
It's not that bad. I think there's something, it's implied there's something in the air that's intoxicating.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of drugs or something.
But yeah, basically that makes you erotically aroused.
As opposed to...
Makes was time dude, slow down, so naked? It's like you're doing more stuff.
I think that dude was like fully naked there.
Well, did we get a little frontal? Here is like fully naked.
It was, yeah, this is definitely you got to.
And this
through.
Was rated PG when it came out, right?
I think it was rated PG.
Not in Quebec.
What are you doing, throwing off the naked woman?
Right.
Now, I really like the heartless. Idea. The idea is that you know, in the back of the sex. Whoa, that's a nice black light shot. In the back of the, you know, essentially the love shop is the secret passage to.
Sanctuary
to where they're going, and, mm-hmm. and now because now we're truly it's like 51 minutes, and when that door closes, we are completely in the new world.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is the halfway mark.
And for me, the film sort of falls off
now.
From this point on,
wow!
See, this is where
I love the spot, the time, the thing they show all the Washington monuments. That's great.
This is the side of the soundstage. They shot it all on the side. I think you told me this.
And what's
what,
why
that
is it?
It's a side of the stage?
It's side of a soundstage.
What did they put on it to make it shiny?
Right down there. Oh, I don't know. But, I mean, clearly that's a matte painting around it for that shot. Here, I don't know. But for me, this is where it got really interesting. I mean, I was interested before, but now I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I've always been post-apocalyptic stuff. You know, I like that.
Leaving what is known,
to
which is their city, now we're going into the Chartered.
Right. You're looking backstage, all the stuff that's not shiny and gleamy, what's making it work and not working. And
I think is sort of underdeveloped, though, in their execution of it.
It didn't bother me. It's still not bothering me. I like the shadows.
Yeah, the shadows are nice.
I mean, this is just a transitional set, though, right? I mean, this is...
Well, yeah, I mean,
the long, once again,
it's their journey. I mean, yeah. It's the whole
thing. Their descent.
As it were.
I think it's direction. I'd have to say it's the way it was directed.
Yes, it was.
It falls off from here what it, the potential of how it could have been directed.
That's interesting because I'm not arguing with you.
It's an energy. It's something.
I don't mind the energy, how it's changed, but it'd be interesting to... Okay, see, now here, this is where he still believes in the mission, mm-hmm. and he gives the signal, and now they know where he is. And that's what kind of surprised me. I'm like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. dude, you're going to die.
After all this?
And you still, because I think he truly believes that if he does this, he will be renewed and he will still live.
But I think it's good because it shows what, you know, how conditioning can be.
And I think it's a great complexity. Mm-hmm.
It's a
I really
good
like
comment.
It. Yeah. It's another way
psychologically.
He's not just a facile character.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I love the blinking thing. I just do. Mm-hmm. So.
And actually, you can see the light from where it separates from his skin.
Oh, really?
It's white because it's...
Now, I think you and I talked about this when we saw this, either Duncan or Tim, but this, I said this was an easy shoot to do because all I had to do was get extras to do that and not have anyone say anything because you can't see their faces.
You told me that.
And then you just dubbed it. And once again, I just really nice. Like how yeah. they, nice. They thought of different things. It's nice they have the sticks and they basically, you know, different kind of technology than we're used to. I really like the inventiveness of it all. And also, actually, they're lit from inside. So they're kind of lighting his face, which is really cool.
It's a very creative use of turkey basters.
Yeah. Well, it is. Phallic.
There's so many use for turkey basters, if you think
so
about it.
So many.
Weren't they using them in that club we were just in upstairs?
I'm pretty sure there was a whole room for that.
I think we're going to have to go back and check it frame by frame. But I don't know. I was fascinated by this idea about this gas that basically can burn your face.
Right.
And this, I mean, this makes it easy to shoot. You don't have to show a lot of it. It's kind of dark. You were complaining about before it was too light. Keeps your costs down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Farrah comes in and she says, oh, he's cool.
Her big
it's
dramatic
okay.
scene.
That's right. And I have to say, I'm sorry. It wasn't very good. She looks pretty.
Right. Oh, she was just starting her journey.
She was.
Super dumb.
She was fresh as a daisy.
Actually, because I had a chance to see the burning bed. Mm-hmm. She's really good in that.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
I noticed she was at her best anytime her character was being abused. Like the burning bed and what was the extremities? She only picked projects where a character was beaten up for a long time.
Well, because she was smart, because it played against what she was known for, which was like
right, breaking the mold.
Being pretty, having no brain of any sorts. You know, depending on her looks and all that kind of thing. And she was really young here, too.
Mm-hmm. She's from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And therefore the hair.
And it's interesting here. It's like, you know, the scene all depends on her. It hinges on Holly. She just doesn't pull it off. That's the horrible thing. It's like, you have to tell them that we're for real, please, so they don't kill us.
And so. You know what, though?
This is like an episode of the TV show, Logan's Run.
It is.
This is the writing.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean,
it's the writing.
This isn't fair.
But it's the writing. But it is also the casting. She couldn't carry it.
Mm-hmm.
Carry
what exactly?
Yeah,
the writing.
Right.
There.
I remember now. I mean, what are you going to do with those lines?
I mean, you can do stuff with stuff. And see, once again, you can't see anyone. No one's faces.
Well, I will say, when I watched her in that scene, it was presentational to me. It was rather than being something of genuine.
Yeah.
What was coming from her.
Actually, if you see that whole scene, you can see everyone's face, and then she's in a pool of light, Farrah Fawcett, down in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Her key light. No one else has one.
Well, she's just in a big shaft of light, so I thought that was interesting. I like this, that he basically says, you have to go back. Mm-hmm. I'm going on my own, because he doesn't want to get her in danger, so he does care about her.
Yeah.
So he's been using her, but this is where he draws the line. So, because I think his idea is that they're going to come and find him and follow him.
Right.
Because he thinks Sanctuary is right around the corner.
Right.
He thought he was going into it
when they were opening the door.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we don't know what Sanctuary
is.
He thought this was it.
No, but he's forgetting the part where the computer said that he was supposed to go outside the wall. He's not technically outside yet.
Well, he might have thought, well, but this might have thought been, that was the way out.
Right, because he didn't know. It might
maybe
have been
he thought this was outside. He doesn't know what outside is. He's never seen it.
Well, that's true.
And there goes Farrah.
He doesn't know the concept.
You're right. He doesn't know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is like Total Recall, by the way. You know when they're busting through?
That's true, huh?
That's right.
Or Total Recall is like this.
I haven't seen that in a long time. That's another movie. You're right.
Total Recall is like this, and there was Holly. Holly's dead.
There's another. That's another movie they're remaking soon. Total Recall.
Yeah, with Colin Farrell. Why?
He just shot one of his other
dudes. See, this is definitely...
For the mission.
Yeah, well, exactly. Really. That might have been crossing the line.
Is this where the mission... Yeah, I think this is where the mission is.
That guy just got shot in the ass.
I know. It's really...
And he screamed.
It's really quite dramatic. Well, the stunt work in this is great. And I like that Francis is behind a grate, like, you know, a cage. Well, I don't know what you want. It's grating of some sort.
But why doesn't he say, look what they did?
You're right. Why doesn't he
why doesn't come he tell, clean? Why doesn't he tell come him? Clean?
He does not come clean.
Because we need a conflict.
Well, he does say stay out of it. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like his... That is a good mystery. It's like, why does he not tell his friend, Francis?
Best friend. It's not just a friend.
Yeah. You know, knows exactly how old he is.
Because basically, essentially, maybe if he tells him, then that's it. He won't understand. Right. This is a great shot, by the way.
At the Dallas, Texas sewage treatment plant.
Nice.
It looks very nice. This is great.
You sure it's not a beer factory like they did the new Star Trek?
Yeah, I'm not saying that's what it was, but it could have been.
But it's really well lit. It all looks very, very good.
That was well lit.
I was always fascinated by this. I mean, once again, all these new things just fascinated the crap out of my 14-year-old self, which is why I'm still fascinated today.
Yeah, it's funny.
This is very nostalgic, this whole film for me.
It is.
Stepping back slightly, yes. I think he's not telling Francis because the computer told him not to. He said, can I bring in another Sandman? And he said no. So he's still thinking about getting his 4 years back.
He still gets thinking about getting the 4 years back. Yeah. Now, of course, this was clever what they did. They gave her an Ankh and they had the other Ankh and they lose it in the water. It's a little lame, but it's actually pretty clever. So they take hers and they go, and that allows Francis to follow.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, at every step, you know, well, not every step of the way, but it was cool.
Now, right there, that might be an editing thing, but it looked like he had an opportunity to take a shot.
Yeah. Oh, he did. He did.
That's and a directing thing.
But he didn't choose to.
I think he chose not to, yeah. And so, it's interesting, the journey, Francis's journey, too, is one of, he's trying to understand what's going on with Logan. And actually, it is a quite interesting one. What if the movie was done from his point of view?
Because
he's not, you know, he's the antagonist in this film, but what if he was trying to chase someone, and of course, for him, Logan has now become his antagonist, because his mission is to support, you know, make sure the system still runs, and Logan is breaking the system. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get the feeling that there's a, you know, he loves him.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to terminate him. I mean, he was bringing people over and partying with him. They lived their lives sort of semi-together.
He didn't shoot him, and Logan didn't shoot him either.
Right.
You know, here's a question, too, is why wouldn't Francis start putting the pieces together? Like, he must know how old Logan is.
Well, he doesn't know he's running.
At least, he just thinks he's being sympathetic to a runner.
Right. Why is he helping a runner?
That's all he knows.
Well, maybe, but I mean that when they were facing off in the tunnels just then,
yeah.
He was standing with the girl and the flashing on his hand was
right,
very
he
obvious.
He was holding hands with the girl. Their hands were right next to each other. He might think she's but he did
right
not
hand.
Yet say,
yeah.
Look what they've done.
I like how they're processing now. It's like, "Oh, you know, this is the underneath of this that doesn't work anymore.
Look at the big
fish. Oh, they just sent. Go ahead.
There were small fish in a set that they just left, and now there's big fish in this.
Well,
they
were just saying that they were talking about, you know, how they used to eat animals, and basically that these guys are all vegetarians.
Oh,
that's interesting. They
did?
Yeah, I think that's what they
talking about.
And I think that was supposed to be a window to the ocean, even though it probably wouldn't have been backlit. Oh, right, it looked like an aquarium, but they were saying it was run by the sea.
Right, because they are by the ocean.
They were powered by the sea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, of course, in the logic of... Okay, now if we talk about geographic logic, I'm going to bring this up because I'm totally going to go for it in Washington. That means they would have been either somewhere out by Annapolis, clearly not on the eastern shore. So, because you have the Chesapeake Bay, so I guess you could have bigger fish, but that's not the ocean. So, I don't know. It's already kind of...
You're trying to pinpoint the city?
I was trying to say, because obviously it's close to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Walking distance.
The domes were built somewhere close by, because obviously they walk, and they don't have to walk too long, and then they get to D.C.
You know, there could be a cool backstory to the whole thing about how, I don't know, are they going to go back over like how it was put together?
I think they're going to re-
later?
They're gonna re-
I can't remember.
They're going to reinvent it. What, in the remake?
In this movie.
How it was
do
built?
They, do they, yeah, does the old man go into like
no, he doesn't
the
know.
Origins of the domes and all?
He doesn't know.
Uh-oh.
Nice flood sequence.
Francis, don't go shooting at tanks full of water.
And if that was Jenny, I don't know, think that was her, but
no.
The stunt woman really hit that wall hard.
Oh, wow. Mm. That's water tank. I wonder where they shot this. I mean, this was an MGM film. I guess maybe MGM. Well,
stage.
MGM was down where Sony is now. So I get, like, obviously.
Well, the guy I knew, Jerry stage. Weaver, he worked for, on the MGM lot. So this was.
Okay, so that's the in their water tank. Look
well,
at that.
I don't know how.
Wow, look at that.
I don't know how his pursuer is going to be able to follow him.
Well, exactly. Well, I guess the water recedes. There's a pumping system.
Ow.
And that's them.
That's them, yeah. That's no stunt person.
And she doesn't have any clothes on to protect her from scraping her skin up, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was pretty tough. No, I like, okay, this is a tiny bit lame.
Yeah, what is?
I lean on this and it accidentally, and of course it's still working after all these years. I'm sorry.
That's, yeah. Again, see, there's a laziness
Actually, maybe not, because it does get used every once in a while, because the point is the 1,000 people who, okay, I don't know what's up with that shot. Why is it, it's like step printed.
Yeah.
The point is that 1,000 people have disappeared and they, to sanctuary. This is where they've come, and that's why it keeps on working. So it does get maintained every once in a while.
I like this, though.
That's a model.
I like this, that they're having to do this to get to the surface to reveal the new world.
Now,
right, it's a great reveal.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
interesting when we meet the robot in the refrigerator. He talks about how
the refrigerator.
The
ice cave.
The big ice cave.
It's the ice cave. Now, of course, why is it an ice cave? Well, it's probably because it's refrigerated so that he can actually make his sculptures.
No, it's refrigerated because that's where they stored food.
That's
remember
what it
he
was.
Goes, and the,
that's right.
So I think the fish were farmed fish. He goes, the fish stopped coming.
Right.
You know, and that's why he tries to take this meat and freeze it.
The feeling I get in watching this movie is that the original draft and screenplay was so much denser with fleshed out ideas. And by the time it translated and got to the screen through whatever production problems they were having, you had to whittle and whittle and whittle things away.
Well, I got
to
say.
And allude only to things that were much.
But I got to say, for all the stuff they had in it, I think for 1976, they did a fantastic job for all the other content in it, is what I'm saying. It could have been, you know, in other words, the concept and all the concepts in there that they did whittle away, but still you're seeing a lot of the best parts of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that they pulled this off is a credit
a
to
lot
it.
Of intriguing
amazing
propositions come your way.
Absolutely.
You say,
these two people who were just submerged in water.
Yeah. Are now.
And look at her costume. I mean, this poor actress had to go through this.
Well, she's in green leotards, to be honest. She is.
And there's a lot of physical things she's doing.
It's not going to keep everything nice and warm.
You know, this is why she's trying to stay warm.
But again, it's not cold there, obviously. It's,
well, clearly not, because
I'm
not seeing the Titanic breath.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I got to tell you, as a 14-year-old, I really like this part.
Oh, they are taking their clothes off, so they don't freeze on them.
No talking. See, I'm like, holy crap. What was that?
Boobies. You're a 14-year-old watching this?
I'm like, Todd, we're staying. We're staying
she
for a second.
She had a tattoo?
She had a tattoo
small of her back.
No.
I think that was just the indent.
Mm-hmm. Indent.
You know the indent.
She didn't have a tramp stamp. This was the 1970s. Wait a minute. He just had pants. How did they come off? They cut
these quickly.
Boom, chicka-boom.
I love it.
Box fascinated me. I'm like, wow. It was amazing.
And I will say the facial mask is not as good as C-3PO's.
But it's Roscoe Lee Brown, which is great. And he had one of my favorite roles of him is in The Cowboys.
Yes. Actually, he was wonderful in that. Yeah.
One of John Wayne's later films. And here they are. They're out of the city, and they're like, what the hell is this? And seeing this in 76, I'm like, this is awesome. It wasn't cheesy. I still don't think it's cheesy. I think the facial thing is really intriguing. Actually, Jim, I mean, you're big into makeup. How'd they do that? I say big into makeup. I'm really under.
Look at the reflection down. You got the crew.
Where?
In the bottom of box.
Oh.
Look at the base, and you'll see these guys sitting around. I saw two guys sitting there.
Damn it.
They were crouching
well, this
down.
This is the problem with having, you know.
It was a very reflective surface. That was a bad choice, crew-wise, I mean, set-wise, to show.
Oh, well. So I was trying to avoid that.
It's a beautiful set, but, I mean, the mirrored creature
right.
is not smart.
Right.
Sorry.
What are you sorry about, Jim?
Nothing.
Just talking to the microphone.
Thank you.
No, I'm just saying, but in terms of what application are they using on his face there?
Well, you know, it looks like a slush cast, but I don't know how they mirrored it. I mean,
and there's his lips, there's his mouth,
you know
there's
what?
His teeth.
It could be.
Oh,
now
you can see it. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be vacuiforms. It might be vacuum metalized vacuiforms.
Right.
Oop. I mean, the technology oop, 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 at the time.
Yes, go ahead.
More crew. This whole thing. I just saw the crew again.
Yeah. Totally.
I'm trying not to see the crew.
Well, that's my favorite thing, is to look at things like that.
My favorite crew shot, I want to say very quickly, is in the movie The Sentinel from the 70s. There's a shot where the car goes by, and you see the whole crew in the car windows as it drives by. Oh, it's awful. So, I mean, basically, I just love the idea of this concept of, you know, here they are, they're expecting sanctuary. And it took me, actually, I didn't understand.
There are your 1,500 people.
I didn't understand, exactly. I didn't understand at 14 what it was. But obviously, when I watched it later in my 20s, like, this is where everyone went. Everyone died. No one ever made it to Sanctuary. And Sanctuary doesn't really exist. And it's just like, oh my God, he's a killer. he's a serial killer robot. Mm-hmm. He's a Terminator.
That's definitely a vacuform piece and a...
Yeah.
A formed and folded piece underneath it.
Well, it's a really, really poor job around his mouth.
Yeah.
Aluminum foil of it all look.
And look,
you could do that now and it would look fine.
Yes.
At the time.
They're all keeping still in there.
And that's a great effect. I like the effect of the frozen.
But you see, he's got
people.
I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's basically killing it. He's freezing everybody and killing everybody to freeze them. Only now he's up against the salmon. I mean, it was pretty horrific. You know, the idea that everyone was supposed to get away.
She had underwear.
Listen to him laughing. Why is he laughing?
Well, that's the thing that doesn't make sense. Why is he laughing? Because is he homicidal?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, does he understand? Okay,
opticals. Bad opticals.
Bad opticals.
Does he understand that he's homicidal? Is it consistent?
And I will say, this is how movies looked in the 70s with optical effects. This is what we were used to, so you have to take that in mind.
We saw some of this in Planet of the Apes.
At the very beginning. What? Yeah. Which Planet of the Apes?
Well,
I don't know. What? Anyway, point being is that I like the idea for Box, but the Box actually does his character track. Does his character track?
Doesn't really.
Here's Jerry Goldsmith's full symphonic entrance.
Right. Well, of course, they see the sun, and of course, they've never seen the sun before, so they're going to look directly into it, and they're going to go blind.
And be fine, yeah.
And that's how the
end of the movie, roll credits.
Ends. They fall off.
We're an hour 10 in, and we're done. That's it.
Now, what is with these mountains that are obviously nowhere near Washington, D.C.?
No, there's mountains near Washington, D.C., in West Virginia.
Well, and how do we
but
know?
It's the wrong direction. It's not the ocean.
How do we know how many years have passed and how much the surface of the Earth has changed?
It's
how do we know what the event was
that
caused
the
whole
200
thing?
Years
good point. Good point. So the main theme...
Actually, 300, because they went 300 years ahead, 1974 to 2274.
Oh, well, it says that, but it's a computer running things. How do we know that that's accurate or that it has a reference point to our particular
because
date?
Because the movie told us at the beginning it was 2274.
In the narration in the very beginning?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. And or was that just the dialogue part later?
Okay. Now, how's Francis coming through here? No, I hear what you're saying. But there's mountains, there's the Appalachians, which are, you know, to the west of Washington. But not to the east. There aren't any mountains to the east.
I love the translucent fish.
And, of course, I will get to the geography of Washington once we get there very shortly. The translucent fish.
Yeah, it's like all these frozen animals have no...
Oh, because they're made of ice.
Well,
I thought there was a display. Like, I'm trying to picture like what that place was when he did process food, and maybe people were there that they would want to have some kind of display to make it look nice, sort of like a lobby area for the food packing plant that has fake fish and birds on the ceiling and stuff.
I think he just kept himself busy.
It's interesting, however, that they would put the food processing place on the outside of the
facility
dome. where no one is to go.
Well, the interesting thing is, if that's no longer working, then what? In other words, did they run out of food? And so, what are they eating now? Is it Soylent Green on the inside?
Well,
kind of a tie-in.
Carousel. Well, refers to my meat
lizard
question.
Up the pants.
But you can't do that. You know, cannibalism essentially eventually drives it. You get a what is it?
Now, this to me is very much Malibu Ranch.
Oh, well, that's
tan she is. They look so tan and healthy.
You know, but basically cannibalism leads you to mental illness because you get the what's it called? Kreutz? Yeah, the shakes. Mm-hmm. It was like we saw in Book of Eli. So you can't really practice that for too long. So how are they eating? I don't know.
Well, you said they were vegetarians.
So they gave up basically all the flesh-based food and they're growing their own plant-based food that they don't need. They didn't need Box for anymore. And Box wreaked his revenge. I just find it significant that they, you know, symbolically why they put them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, okay, going back to what you were saying, Tim, now essentially the journey is like, well, they've left now and they've, you know, now we know what's happened to everybody. That's actually kind of a weakness. We found out what happened to everybody basically halfway through the film. We needed to find out what happened to everybody essentially at the end of the film or close to, like the end of the second act. This is like at the midpoint we found out that everyone died, and now they're basically out on their own, and he's still trying to find sanctuary because they can't go back. Mm-hmm. So this becomes like a different film, a different kind of structure. So maybe that's where, because now the tension is, well, he can't go back, so they're going. The only tension is the fact that Francis is chasing them,
right?
Which is kind of weak.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's what this point of the film drops off for me.
And then what it creates for itself is another story, which is now they're going to discover the old world with the old man who is so old, and it's so old that he doesn't even know how it all became the way it became. Because all he had was a mother and a father, and he doesn't know anything else. He doesn't have a name. It's just what it is. And you see, she even says, well, perhaps we're the first people to get through. She's right. No one else got through. But they still believe. Once again, that's another myth. They believe in sanctuary.
Why would they believe that?
It's like, you know, they believe what they well, set
like
their belief system.
Carousel.
They can't get rid of that belief system, but it takes a while to get, you know, to work your way through a belief system when you find out it's not true. And they've seen it is not true.
Right.
Well, actually, no. No, that,
you've
actually,
seen
it's
the
not
depth
true.
Of how much it's not true.
They don't know it's all completely true. They know there's an outside which they weren't told about. They still believe in a sanctuary, but they still believe in renewal. And they know that, and they believe in carousel, and that's the last piece that they have to get. Is they have to get over the whole point
Logan,
that it doesn't.
But Logan did say, "Has no one ever been renewed?"
He's questioning, but he's not there yet. They do come to the conclusion later. Oh, Malibu's great.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yes. Apparently, they have no fear.
Clearly, well, the stuntmen have no fear.
They've never seen stuff like that, I guess, huh? Like nothing's dangerous.
Well, they know what gravity is.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they threw a guy off a balcony earlier in the show.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for destroying that
moment.
Moment.
My suspended disbelief.
That was funny.
Basically, what they don't know is how deep the pool is. They might have had water to jump into over there, but maybe it's all deep enough that you can't get hurt.
Oh, so
and now this is where they discover their crystals. Of course, that they're naked, like Adam and Eve,
fantastic.
And that their crystals are. Clear.
Go on.
So which means, okay, actually getting back to what the crystals are, it's not actually, it's networked. It has to do with proximity.
Right.
So it's not actually, it has to do with proximity to...
The city.
The city and the computer.
Yeah.
Mm. To the server.
To the computer.
They're out of range of the wireless network.
Right.
That's basically what they're suggesting.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Independent device is like, you know, connected somehow.
Well, it is. Yeah, exactly. So that is interesting.
But that would have been almost supernatural then, as far as technology is concerned.
Right. She has nice shoulders. True. She has very nice shoulders.
I'm glad you like her shoulders.
I like her shoulders. What can I say?
And we're listening to the Logan's Run love theme.
And they're kissing for the first time.
By the way.
And, she's now chosen him.
She has chosen him, exactly. Because before they were... Well, we don't know, and...
It's almost reminiscent of Blue Lagoon right now.
Well, but it's like Adam and Eve.
Or Green Lagoon.
It is.
Green Lagoon, actually, much more appropriate. In
actually, let's look at this. How is this... But think about it. They're like Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. In other words, they have some... I don't know. I don't want to stretch the analogy too much, but they've been cast out of Eden, in a way. He was cast out, and she's come with him.
Good. Yeah.
In a way.
You can go that direction,
I mean,
if you like.
They've, you know, basically computer said, you're getting out of paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do my bidding.
Yeah, but to me, the city was not paradise. To me, the city was not paradise.
But it seemed like paradise.
Well, they were under the illusion of
everything was provided for them.
I'm not questioning that. Okay, I want to talk about geography here, really, because I'm from Washington.
Its morality and everything did not.
And I have to tell you, now what they're doing is they're walking towards the Washington Monument and towards the Capitol. Now, you have to know that right behind them geographically is the Lincoln Memorial. Okay, so you've got Lincoln Memorial, then Washington Monument, then the Capitol, all right, which is where they wind up and the old man is. Now, they come through the grass. They've been going forward geographically. And what do they see, ladies and gentlemen? The Lincoln Memorial.
Oh, so they went backwards.
So basically, it's like they have no idea what the geography of Washington is. I just had to point that out. And it's always like, when I moved to Washington, I'm like, that is so wrong.
Wait, that was the first thing you thought of when you moved to Washington was Logan's Run?
Yes. When I went downtown and I saw it. When I saw downtown, I saw Lincoln Memorial, saw Washington Monument, I saw Capitol. I'm like,
that's someone
what the
who
hell?
Has film on the brain.
Serge was lost for weeks in Washington trying to figure based on what he knew about Washington.
Logan's Run, you see, and I got
Logan and Jessica took this way. And
they got lost. How could they do this? Yeah. Come on, hey.
Awesome.
You know what?
Awesome.
It is what you do, a little bit of research and you find out. So in my book, that's a big mistake.
Well, anyone who lives there obviously was cackling when they saw this movie.
They're just rolling their eyes. Are you kidding?
Oh, please.
Well, that's, yeah. But this is a really cool sequence. And this is basically the first time they see an old face.
Nice pullback.
And it's a very nice pullback. And that's actually, I think it's a glass mat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So it's actually in camera. But I got to say, those leaves are shot really bad. It's bad lighting. Well, it's actually very flat lighting on their face, too.
Very flat lighting.
We're back to a cathedral. But the look of that is really cool. I mean, you know, it's fascinating to think of what would it be like if everything was overgrown with vines and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they need to walk, like, down a beach, and then they see Charlton. Or no, that would be too far. Charlton Heston and the Statue of Liberty.
They have to walk 300 miles up north. I don't know where this is in Washington, honestly. It's somewhere around
back lot.
It's in Southeast. I don't know. Actually, from a certain angle, I'm sure there is. I don't know. Obviously, it's movie logic. We're not even
aware
of it.
In New Orleans.
And once again, you know, now they see a graveyard and they have no idea. Once again, it's these things they don't know.
How can you wrap your mind around it if you
don't
know
what it
is?
They don't understand what it is. You know, beloved husband, beloved wife.
Yeah,
they don't even realize it's a graveyard.
And they don't even have monuments really inside the domes.
No, because there are no bodies.
There's no bodies.
No, but I mean, disregarding like
monuments,
crypts
or
something, just no monuments, no statues saying... commemorating an event.
Actually, it's interesting.
That's about it, though, right?
There's probably no... into the little that we've seen, there's probably no history.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they focus on history. I mean, why would you if you're just focusing on the moment and pleasure,
right? You're focusing on your 30 years, and that's it.
Real interesting.
You know what? A lot of stuff was in camera, I think. When they climbed those steps, she climbed too far, and she was getting covered by the leaves. She went underneath the leaves.
And this is likely all a glass painting. So it's glass mat. Sorry about the gnats there, Duncan. They're infesting Los Angeles these days.
I was hungry anyway.
Okay.
Now, where's his weapon? Has he lost it?
I think it's on his hip.
Oh, okay.
He got it. You know what? I don't know. Did he lose it?
It's in his pants.
No, not that weapon.
the other weapon.
Oh, that one, right.
Oh, you know, you may be right. He may have lost it. Otherwise, he'd pull the gun out.
Or he just prefers wood.
That's right. He prefers a bat with a nail through it, you know.
Wow. Strangely reminiscent of the Renaissance fair that I was just at yesterday.
What, you walk around with a piece of a table leg?
No, just lots of talking about wood and weaponry.
Wood and nails?
Yes, Serge, thank you for continuing my joke.
Thank you.
Look at her. She's terrified.
It's like, what's
never
that?
Saw a cat before.
They've never seen a cat. They've never seen any
I love
of
that.
This stuff. And I got to say,
like, first a lizard, now a cat.
I got to tell you, being the dog lover I am, I look the same way at cats. Sorry.
But it's great that they play this, and they didn't play too childlike, but everything that is normal to us is all new to them.
Right.
They have no idea about anything.
Yeah.
And they play it out.
Which is fun as actors, that you get to do all that.
Right. And here's the great Peter Ustinov.
Yeah, some bad makeup.
Yep. But he did a really good job acting.
Yeah, it's so refreshing when he does come into this film because of how natural his acting is. It shows off how presentational so many of the other people have been.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ad lib in here. I forget where it is, but it's funny.
And of course, I mean, the comment is that, you know, everything, all society, all civilization was abandoned, and here was the seat of government, essentially, and it's all overgrown. And there's an old man with lots of gads. I love that that's their context. Logan 5 and Jessica 6.
And we can all agree there is a skylight.
Well, there's a hole in the ceiling.
Yes, it's very well. Yes. The sun is pouring in.
The wide shot.
But I like that he has no name. You know, he's so old he doesn't even know his name anymore. And the idea that they think this is sanctuary.
Right.
That's the thing. And he has no flippin' idea. In the book, there was a sanctuary. And it was off planet. Basically,
oh, really?
They made themselves. No, yeah, they made their way to a rocket of some sort, and I don't know if it's at the end of Logan's Run or at the end of Logan's World, but Sanctuary actually was off planet. Yeah, like at a space station.
That's
or something else.
That's kind of cool. I wonder if they'll do that in the new one.
Well, I think keeping it on Earth is fine. It was just they stretched that whole thing of getting away. It was a real thing. So I thought it was a very interesting take here that they actually made Sanctuary a fictional place and then changed it. You know. I mean, so you have essentially two movies.
Right.
And it's a different way of taking it. It really is than what you'd expect. But in the context of the 70s, it's sort of like saying, you know, you want to believe... It plays into the cynicism of the 70s, that you want to believe that there's something else out there. And, you know, they're going to tell you to believe that. And even the myth of getting away from what you believe, it's still not there. So you basically have to depend on yourself in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to grow up beyond those things. Mm-hmm. There is no sanctuary. You want to believe there's one, but there isn't. So, but of course, they're entranced by him. Oh, this is a great comedic moment. He was fantastic in this.
Mm-hmm.
He really was. I remember the publicity before this came out. There was a lot of talk about, you know, that there was this. Though I didn't know anything about this before it. But of course, with Peter Ustinov's performance, it was very highly praised. Because he actually had his acting had slowed down by now.
Now, what's Peter Ustinov's history?
Tim?
History? What do you mean?
Well, where's he from? You know.
I don't know. I remember the correct pronunciation is Ustinov, I think. Peter Ustinov.
Okay.
But what I have read, I haven't read about him before his film career, but things I've read about him from his film career on, the guy is a genius.
Yeah.
The guy is one of the smartest guys you ever bump into, and he had an awesome sense of humor, sense of humor. He's
a big writer, too.
Big writer, spoke multiple languages, sort of a Renaissance guy, just did everything. Yeah.
But was he an American?
I don't think so.
He was British.
Was he British?
Was he?
I think maybe. It's interesting what he's been talking about, the whole cat naming thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's from the T.S. Eliot book, which is what the musical Cats is based on.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where he's kind of, you know, that's where he's learned how to name cats.
Mm-hmm.
Or the whole name, the cat naming thing. It's interesting that they bring that too. I mean, that, you know, they spend a lot of time in the whole thing of a cat having three names, which is essentially the idea that, you know, we have public name, private name, all that. So what's its, you know, in other words, what's the message that's kind of being told to Logan and Jessica? You have to know who you really are.
Yeah.
You know, which they don't know. They don't know. They've got this
right.
Small,
they know what's
limited.
Assigned to them.
Essentially, they're adults, but they're still children because they don't know. They only know what they've had in basically the childlike hedonistic society they've been living in.
What I will say about Peter Ustinov is, if anyone's interested to watch a film that he directed, I caught this film that he directed and I was really impressed. It's called Billy Budd, and Terrence Stamp, I believe, is in it.
Oh.
It was like one of his first roles. Robert Ryan is in it, Peter Ustinov. And it's all about like Mutiny on the Bounty type of scenario. And it's back in that time period and on a ship, on a Navy vessel. And it's all about justice and versus the law.
Hmm.
And it's very, talk about a can of worms of what it presents, of things you can just talk about forever in the justice system, the law, and morality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very dramatic, very, very good film. So check it out if you're interested in wanting to see how he directed a film.
Right. I like how this whole conversation, he's basically now, he's bringing them up on all their concepts of about, you know,
burying the dead.
About burying the dead. And also about pregnancy and about how to come to life, because all they know is they grew up in,
right,
you know, in the lab kind of thing. And so they're like, once again, it's just like revealing this. I mean, this is the whole long part you were talking about, how it keeps on dragging on, and they're just kind of, it is, I mean, it's all about them talking
it's,
to him.
It's dialogue. Here, it's a huge dialogue.
But they're learning all the concepts that they don't know,
right,
which is what it really means to be human. Like reproduction and, I mean, the whole life cycle outside of the technological bubble that they were living in.
Mm-hmm.
So. And he always goes back to his comfort zone by talking about the cats. It's interesting because that's like his world and how he studies them. And that's how he's learned to see the world through how the cats, so to speak.
Right. Who else does he have?
Exactly.
I think just the way the coverage, the camera setups, the way it's shot, it's very
it's flat. It is
lethargic.
Yes. That I will totally agree, and that makes
just
it tough.
Set it up, have people talk, blah blah blah.
I mean, it is. I mean,
there's no inventiveness, imagination to it.
You know what? Okay, I bet I know what happened. They actually had sequences where they had it in different scenes and stretched over time a little bit, and they were like, you know what, we got to get this
slap
all in,
together.
So we have to put it all together to one scene, and do it. Yes, McCavity.
That's the cat thing you're talking about.
Yeah, it's from, I guess, the T.S. Eliot.
T.S. Eliot references. Angelical cat, too.
Well, but that's interesting, is that the thing is he lives with the cats and he studied the book about the cats. Mm-hmm. I don't know whatever came first, but it becomes how he sees them. But the point is they put that in there. That was their choice to then be able, to, when they meet him, this is how he sees the world. And this is what teaches them about, other than he's an interesting character, how to see the world. You know,
right.
It could have been dogs, it could have been birds, it could have been snakes, it could have been anything else. That's what I'm just trying to pull out. What is it about the whole cat thing? And now, of course, we're getting on. I mean, he's just like larding it on. Now it's about the people, government, mm-hmm. and
everything his parents told him.
Well, ruling, I mean, government, and how, I mean, he's teaching them about how to live, how people live their lives when they live their lives autonomously, so to speak.
Well, and what I get from it is that he lives basically in a, I mean, this room at least has all kinds of books laying around that would have been about law, history, whatever. I mean, it's the Capitol. So it puts, what else does he have to do but read?
It's like Burgess Meredith in that Twilight Zone episode.
Actually, no,
before he loses his glasses.
In a way,
it's classic.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Oh, it's great. But this is like his dome. In other words, they live in their dome.
Yes.
This is his dome, and they've come into his dome.
And you could, you know, apply that today. You know, what is your dome, personally, that you live in? What do you choose your world to be?
Mm-hmm.
The world's too enormous to take it all in. That's why passion presents focus, and you can only, you know, hone in on what you want to see of it.
Mm, right. Good point.
And this is where now, it's interesting. See, he's telling her now that Sanctuary doesn't exist. At some point, he came to the realization, we didn't see it, we didn't need to see it, but he's teaching her now, Sanctuary is not real. Which was kind of, it freaked me out when I saw this. I was like, what do you mean Sanctuary is not real? I want, because, you know, you set me up, I wanted Sanctuary.
Right.
We're
yeah.
Sanctuary. No, it's not.
This is the goal.
It's a more adult concept.
It's manipulative, and it's 14, a nice manipulation.
For a 14-year-old, that was tough for me to process. I was just like, but I still kind of was like, okay.
So that you lie to your characters and you lie to your audience, basically.
And then you pull back the lie, and depending on their maturity, how can they take it and reflect on what that is? Oh, he had red hair. Yeah.
Leave her alone. I think that was an ad lib. Peter Ustinov's cool that
yes.
way. Spartacus, he had awesome ad lib about the sun and an umbrella. Anyone who knows Spartacus knows what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I got to watch that again. It's been a long, long time.
He won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, I believe, for...
Quo Vadis, didn't he?
Was it Quo Vadis? Why do I want to say Topkapi?
Oh, I think you're right. Maybe he won it twice.
Maybe for both. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And, of course, now their new paradise is going to fall apart any second now. Never leave the girl alone. That's what happens in the movie.
Oh, wait a minute. I think he won for Spartacus. Could have been Spartacus and Topkapi.
Oh, man, look at that. Overlit. Richard Jordan was an intense actor. And it's interesting. Francis sees everything that contradicts everything he's known, and he still
can't
accept it.
Adjust. He can't take, what is it, Matrix, take the red pill?
He can't, well, it's cognitive dissonance. He cannot process it. So, oh, and there's the picture of Lincoln. And of course, hey, I call to the girl who is missing mysteriously.
Right.
And all I see are cats.
And light.
Lots of light. But even the light is not directional. That's probably the quality of it is just so studio lighting, and that's what just breaks my heart.
That's true.
It really
does
break my heart. Mm-hmm. Oh well, I guess with the new movie, maybe they'll do a little better, and they'll have lots of CG, and Ryan Gosling will be Logan, and literally, there's been like
there's a mat,
glass painting.
I don't think so. That was optical, I think.
Yeah,
because you got two different levels.
Two different images there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, actually, the right side is...
Yeah, that's all painted. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way they did it. L.B. Abbott was...
That was cool. I'm glad they did that. At least they gave us some imagination there.
Absolutely. I mean, I know it doesn't date that well in terms of the special effects, but I got to tell you, it was really effective for 76. It was like, you know, you didn't see stuff like that. See, it's interesting that Francis is just like, I have to, he's so in the mission again. He just can't accept it. And even when he sees that his crystal is what, it's like it completely destroys his belief system. Look at that.
The fight scene.
Now, okay, but does it destroy it so much that he has to fight and try and kill Logan? Is that what
Whoa,
it is?
Oh, poor putty tat.
Cat! That wasn't a real cat, really.
Well, so much for the no animals harm disclaimer.
Yeah.
Look, that was a stunt cat.
Maybe not harmed. Stunt cat. Scared, maybe not harmed.
It is. I mean, seriously.
Stunt
like,
pussy.
It's like, okay, you can fight, but do not hurt the cats.
Yeah, but they needed, you know, they needed to wake the audience up, and they said, we'll have a fight here.
Whoa!
No, but
that chair was super light. I love the breakaway chairs.
Is the fight motivated, is my point?
No.
It's a cinematic.
It is a cinematic thing. Yeah, it's not, it's like, we're, it needed more, once again, getting back to the director, needed more, and of course, classic,
using the flag,
he has no idea what it is to try and destroy him, to kill him.
To kill the truth.
He's killing him with the American flag.
Real deep.
Yeah, there you go. He's killing the truth.
Well, this is made in the 70s.
Well, that's right.
That's true. That's true.
That's right. He is.
Vietnam is fresh.
Vietnam had just... No, when this was filmed, it hadn't ended.
Yeah, it's still going on. Wait, this came out in 76?
Yes, Vietnam...
Didn't it end in like 73 or...
No.
Two?
Draft ended in 74, combat ended in 75, and Saigon fell in 76, or maybe one year separate.
Okay. The stuntman.
It
might have
been 74, 75. It might have been combat in 74, but it was just fresh, completely fresh. That was awful. This was brutal. It really was.
The stuntman who was being Logan had a bad wig, and his head went right into that desk.
Oh.
If you can rewind it, whoever's out there.
Yeah, I saw the wig.
So
be sure and pause us before you rewind it, though.
Hit his noggin hard on that desk.
Wow. And Logan, man, Logan is like, once again, he is a killer, so he did what he...
Oh, did he just kill his friend?
He just basically whacked the crap out of him with the flagpole, yeah. Don't you remember? And now finally, Francis, in his dying moments, can accept. He can't even accept it then, because what does he say when he sees his palm? He says he's been renewed. You know? He still can't process it for some reason. Well, which gets back to the whole idea of renewal. Does renewal mean that you actually continue on beyond 30, or do you get reborn as a child?
Because the first time I watched it, I thought it was a continue on beyond 30 thing, and I kind of wondered why no one put the pieces together before. Like, wait a minute, I haven't seen anybody around.
Right, and I think when I saw it originally, I think that's what it was. I think that's what it is. So when you get renewed,
the babies have a clear crystal.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So in a way, maybe as you grow older, it starts changing color.
Yeah.
So they did work something out about that, which is interesting.
And now they're seeing the burial.
Man, that'd be heavy to experience for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just seeing it happen to somebody you know, but digging the hole yourself.
For your best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone through a lot.
When you can't call somebody to come dissolve the the cadaver.
Right.
Right. This is better lighting for that set.
Now, what did we promise? Oh, that he, that they would bury him, do you think? Or?
Oh, yeah, he said something about that, yeah.
Because otherwise the cats will eat him.
Yeah.
That's what cats do.
There it is.
Oh.
That's a nice shot. I like that shot. Nice lighting on her. Her eyes sparkle.
Mm-hmm. It's almost one of those 1960s fuzzy glamour shot things.
Mm, a little diffused.
Yeah,
but the lighting, this is, you know, like pools of light rather than all that flat light. This is much classier.
For sure. Should have been more similar to this.
Moodier.
In the
needed
previous
mood.
Scenes.
Needed
yeah.
Lots of mood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of environment. Lots of tangible textures and things in the environment. Not flat.
She's expressing her fear and everything in a very different way. Like she's freaking out at everything, and it, like her whole motivation and mind changes every 2 seconds. It seems like just flip flop back and forth
as to whether she's with him or leaving. And
with him leaving, sanctuary's there. It's not. Mm. You know, I don't know.
All I want is to be alive and be with you. There's her complete motivation.
Hmm.
Later and it's she'll rare.
Say, later she'll say, all I want is to just you to die and I can get away.
Are you having
mood
issues
swings?
At home?
I read somewhere that it's very rare for an actor to say in dialogue their complete character's motivation, like what she just did. That
right.
Writers
That's
rarely
true.
Ever do that. That through behavior, through other things are shown.
Yeah, it's a little simplistic.
But it's very
to do that.
Rare for a dialogue to be the very thing to sum you up.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that was cheesy in that moment or not so much?
No, it didn't hit me as cheesy. So what? How much time have we spent in this place with Peter Ustinov?
Like close to half an hour almost.
Close to half an hour. That's a huge chunk of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's Peter Ustinov.
Now, I don't, you know...
well, I don't mind Peter Ustinov. I just wish
you characterize this as really being super slow and where the movie comes to basically a grinding halt. I don't mind this. I mean, it's not... Frankly, I thought it was a little frenetic earlier. It was kind of hard to follow.
It's a nice contrast to before. You know, all the action, all the bright lights. Here, everything's natural, subdued. It is a different pace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but okay, if you think in terms of mythic structure, she's looking pretty jungly, yeah.
Yeah, she became a character from, you know, the Disney film, Peter Pan.
See, once again, yeah. Now they're walking towards Lincoln earlier. Memorial. I'm telling you, that's where they're walking. He talks about the fish dying.
Oh, yeah, look, you can see the progression just there.
Background. Now it makes sense, the direction they were going. I think they, who knows what they did. I don't know.
Maybe they got bored and turned around, and they just didn't show that.
I like all his little quips. I mean, basically, he's telling them what it was, that everything just went away.
Yeah. A road with bits of metal to use it.
Oh, my gosh.
He just keeps on talking. I like. He's like the kid. Are we there yet? Oh, let me tell you a story. Mm-hmm.
I get the idea that he's senile or, you know, more than a little bit senile, not just that he's been out by himself for too long.
I think if you were out there by yourself for that many years,
you'd be kind of crazy.
True, but, you know, it seems like
comparatively he'd crazy,
retain
by the way.
certain things about himself. I don't know.
I actually kind of doubt it.
It's a bright moon.
Very bright.
Look at that fire. I mean, the moon is brighter than the fire.
Also, the counter moon on the right side of the screen is very bright.
And also the moon behind them. It's coming down like in a nice little lighting scheme for them.
That's amazing.
Got the nice rim light moon.
Oh, Mr. Laszlo, we're sorry, but, you know.
Logic. Light logic. Where's your light logic?
Exactly. I mean, the woods are lit well.
Well, it's very safe to travel in the woods, apparently.
Apparently.
300 years in the future.
No natural predators. You know, honestly,
but
given the way our ecosystem is in this country right now, you let it go, and basically deer and other animals of that sort would take over. We don't have enough natural predators to keep the population down.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So that's why they have hunting seasons and stuff now. And, you know, they regulate it. But I don't know. I guess eventually the ecosystem would either balance itself collapse in a big way.
All ecosystems will balance
eventually,
but it may not be in favor of having people around, quite frankly.
No.
Hey,
well,
look,
no, I wasn't
talking
about
the beach with Charlton Heston.
The apes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Statue of Liberty.
That is totally one of those beaches. How many domes are there? There must be like 20 or... Could you imagine that? How many different domes?
A lot of people.
Would people from different domes like...
Look at this. Why would you ever keep going there? It's like, ooh, let's just live here
on the beach. Exactly. What do you want?
Would people from different domes be segmented? Or
exactly. Do people from one dome know that there are other people in
other domes?
Good
point.
Well, or when you're in those tubes, do you pass from dome to dome?
Good question, which is not answered in the film.
It's not answered. I don't think they ever thought about this.
This was a really cool water... place in Dallas, in Texas somewhere. I forget the name of it.
I was going to say, it looks like Texans. It's an actual structure. It doesn't look like it's
this was not built for the film.
No, that was not.
This is a location.
Is it still there? Any idea?
I don't know.
It'd be great to do like a Logan's Run Dallas, Texas tour. This and the like the one or two buildings they shot in
Dallas,
front of.
Somewhere in Texas, some central hub.
That's pretty wild. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all of them. That's Peter Ustinov. Well, he wasn't that old then.
And, of course, the art directors.
I love this way he does here. Look what Peter Ustinov does. He's, like, about to walk off. It's like, oh, I got to go. It's a little touch like that, which is great.
Good character work.
But, you know, the art director wants you to think this is a set.
That's bad.
No, it'd be like, you know, hey, yeah, sure, we built that for the film.
I didn't even think of that. It was sort of like, ooh, we're in 2274. That's what I want to believe. I don't want to think about, oh, it's a set that's been built.
That's
true.
You
know,
but
what,
I think that way.
Well, so. You know, it's funny. It's like, hey, you can come with us. You know, do a Shelley Winters from the Poseidon Adventure. Nah, I think I'd rather not. See, it's interesting. Once again, his world is cats. But he did see people before, so... Now, I'm glad that they're really confident that when they dive down here, that they're going to be able to come up enough time.
Yeah. Right? Or that it's even, I mean, you can't tell. The water's stirred. How do you know if it's 3 feet deep?
Exactly. Yeah. Or where the tunnels are. I mean, but they're young and they're virile. And
you hear two thuds, and again, the credits roll.
Yeah. And that's that.
Peter's left standing there.
Sweet. Oh,
no,
my.
No. They dive in. A few seconds pass, its bodies come to the surface.
That was the alternate ending number one. Okay, they just reversed the film on this. Come on. You have to be that lazy.
Yeah,
it's the same piece of film that they just had.
Better.
They flipped it. I'm complaining now. Okay.
It's like...
I can't believe you're complaining about Logan's Run, Serge.
I am complaining.
It's your movie.
There's a few things. Well, the guy waiting for Richard Jordan to walk is one of my big complaints. Okay, now we're back to non-complaint. That's a nice white. I like the lens. I like when the lens just curves the horizontal line just a bit. Mm. I think it's like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was it the lens or was it the...
It's like a 12.
Was it the architecture? I couldn't tell.
Right? Oh, no, it's the lens. When you get the really wide lens, what they do is they do curve it.
Well, I know. It's just looking at that particular, like, shot right then. I thought it was the architecture, not the lens.
No.
Thanks.
Yet.
Good to know.
Now, what's funny is that they get back into the dome and suddenly their gems start glowing again.
Oh.
Are you sure?
I was going to say they're dry.
Not the architecture, because it definitely curves more on the left than the right.
That's because the lens. It's lens distortion.
Okay.
What he said. Okay, so where are they? And now they're climbing up through the infrastructure, which I always thought was interesting. That actually is...
That's a mat.
That was a mat, yeah.
Hmm.
And here, I'm trying to remember where they pop up. Those were always interesting.
Apparently, mats. Not within those really bad-looking model bushes.
So now we're back to Carousel.
Yeah,
that's right. And then they just show up. So in other words, all we saw was like two shots. This is footage from the first time around. No,
right.
The bad mat woman isn't there. Oh, she is there on the left. Why'd they have her? They had to rotoscope her. That was so dumb. And see, now they're just there. I would like to see them. Like,
you know, a Reader's Digest return compared to the length of time it took for them to get out and for us to travel with them. Yes.
Exactly. So either a script or budget or cut out or, well, but then if they cut it out, it means they didn't shoot it well enough. So now, of course, he's yelling, hey. Now, this is interesting. This is the I'm telling you the truth scene, and no one can believe it. Everyone's just like laughing. You're crazy. You know what I mean?
Yes, it's the Sonic Green is made of people moment.
Well, we listened then.
Right, but that was the end roll credits moment film.
You know, it's the our lives are a lie. I'm trying to think of another movie that has this kind of moment. And no one can accept it. But the Sandmen know and they have to arrest you.
Right. Of course the Sandmen are going to come and get them.
Because they're on directives from
They didn't really plan that out, did they?
Right, because they're on the directives from the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we have seen her underwear all through the second part of this movie.
Yeah, we have.
We have?
Yes.
Disappointing.
And
I've counted it probably four times.
I'm not complaining.
It is disappointing.
Look
at that freeze frame. That was a zoom in on a freeze frame.
I know. I want to know what 033-02 is. I really do.
You don't have an optical through beads. It doesn't look good.
Oh, Tim, if that's the only thing you're bothered by. I like this. And in start, what is it? Multiple surrogation? What the hell is that?
Now this
These guys look old.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, those Sandmen looked old.
They look older than 30. Now,
heavy drinkers.
This is huge, guys. Yes. This is a big technical.
Yeah, the hologram thing.
Hologram. The
real
first
holograms.
Time a hologram was ever shown in a feature film.
Multiple surrogation. Okay.
Is Logan's Run, the sequence.
And these are real holograms.
This was not optical effect. And it's one of these rotating. See, look at the. See
oh my
rotates?
Gosh, look at that.
And it's moving.
And the sound is synced to picture. This is not post dubbed.
And I mean, I like how they were used basically to go into his mind and bring out. I think this is really clever. It's beyond that. It's just really ingenious to have essentially avatars speaking your inner thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Using, of course, technology of the day, which we still don't see much of holograms. I mean, I think we take them a little for granted, but they're not really of any use. But this time, I remember the technology was huge.
Oh, this
was like,
big deal.
So really
76,
like
this was a whoa. You turned to your friend, you're like, that's so awesome.
And that's what's great, because they kept on bringing the technological surprises in, the surprises of what there was in terms of technology. They saved this till the end, which is great.
But look at the distortion.
Yeah. And I like the fact that the computer can't process with what Logan is
saying.
And
this, to me, is very Star Trek.
Well, it's Star Trek, but it's interesting because I think the computer would accept, well, if Logan says and went outside, why would he lie? What does the computer, and that's what doesn't track, does the computer want Logan to actually say there is a sanctuary? But he can't because he tells the truth. So and it doesn't want to reprogram
him. And
you
remember
him.
The last time he was here at one point, the computer withheld information from him.
So, but
now he's turning the tables.
And the thing is that now, by actually saying that, he's actually once again, it's a Star Trekking thing. He's destroying the computer because the computer can't process. So the computer actually started this whole problem at the beginning. It shouldn't have asked it because it actually asked a question that couldn't be answered. Right? It's like in Star Trek. It's like in iMUD when Kirk destroys the computer by saying everything I say is a lie, and he says I am lying, and basically destroys a computer intentionally. The computer set itself up for destruction.
Yeah. Mm.
It asked Logan to find sanctuary. He tells it sanctuary doesn't exist. It destroys the computer.
Right.
Yep.
That makes no sense.
Now is it scanning like imagery from
his
mind?
That's just crazy.
This is a way for us to recap the whole film.
The entire film.
Which is kind of cheesy.
And to burn up running time.
Thank you. Mm. That was.
But now we get to our big slam bang pyrotechnic finish.
That's right, because now all the technology is going. The computer.
Here we go. This is what all the us kids were waiting for in the movie theater.
Totally, right?
Yes,
shoot
absolutely.
Everything.
Shoot everything. The computer is dying. The whole system is going to die.
All your sets, all your production design blows up.
Everything blows up. And this is a great shot.
It's a Bond film. It's everything all rolled into one.
The tracking shot, and he stops at the last one, the red one.
And look at the delay.
But that's significant. He shoots the red one symbolically
right,
because it's
the
red that has to die, the color of the crystal. And, of course, something from the ceiling falls
down.
Of course
it does. Debris.
It's
debris. Awesome.
Because
the
computer. Because the computer. It's like, why?
And now the mall blows up.
Oh, yeah, the ceiling mirrors again.
Everything blows up.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, oh, no.
Huge.
The computer, you know, everything would just shut down. Everything would just lock up. No. Pieces of
styrofoam building.
Pieces of concrete have to fall on people.
Giant pieces of concrete. Oh, it's the dome opening up, isn't it?
You see, this is where
is it?
This is where
it's not opening up.
Well, something just fell from the ceiling.
This is where it all lost me. This is like the end of Dr. No, or you know.
As I said, it's the end of every Bond film. It's you know all the genres coming together.
and that's the problem. Everything they built up to this, and they blew it up with literally with all the cliched crap that it all blows up because it does. With no
right.
explanation behind it.
Right.
This is where they take everything
and we accepted it.
I could have accepted, and now I can't accept anything anymore.
Hey, I started on fire.
Dang.
Nice. They didn't have a burning stunt until now, which is good.
That's a nice shot right there.
That mm-hmm. is. So
why are the people invisible?
That because it was a bad mat.
Well, they're supposed to be silhouettes, but it didn't come.
Okay. I think this woman... If I remember correctly,
she's
a Playboy.
Iconic. Look at her.
She was a Playboy playmate.
Gorgeous up there. I mean, it's a gorgeous image.
I think it's her. I think I remember reading that in Playboy.
Oh.
Mom and Dad, I was reading Playboy when I was young. Sorry.
Really? I thought I...
Mom and Dad? Like coffee tape? Wow.
No.
No.
No, but he's confessing.
I like Jim's comment.
I was hiding him.
Right? I like Jim's comment. It was a beautiful imagery. It's like these fire and explosions. It's like the Wraith. You know, beauty coming from destruction sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. But I still think it's a facile ending. And in other words, somehow everything magically explodes and destroys and no one dies and everyone's young and beautiful. And there's some symbolism. I mean, it's just facile. Like you can, and of course they love the old guy, which is nice.
Facile. Is that an English word?
Yes.
From the French facile, which means easy.
But it
isn't. And may I say,
yes.
Go Jerry Goldsmith. This is where he takes the score home in this cut.
Oh, yeah. He did a great job.
The love theme, bring on the strings, the orchestra swells.
Is this our Playboy playmate?
Yeah, she's a Playboy playmate. Like
she is?
Like in 75 or 76. Oh, yeah. Hmm. She was nice.
Maybe with her clothes off.
Well, you know, she got the role.
She got the role, yeah.
That's what it was. That's what they did. And, of course, I like that they're lost in the crowd and they see everyone else kind of accepting him, even though it's still kind of cheeserific. And, you know, for what it is, he does a great job with it. Look at that. This is a great acting job.
Go, Jerry. Dun, dun, dun.
And she's like, she's mute.
She turns to him and says,
she's from Planet of the Apes.
Can we have
talk.
Sex? Because that's right. The way they ask each other things.
That's right. No, it's not. Can we have sex? Let's have sex.
Let's have sex. You're old, and I've never had sex with old.
That's right. But I like that Logan and Jessica are amongst the crowd, and he's separate from them. I just like that. I like that the blocking for that.
Of course, I love the music here, and I love the optical and how they do this part right here.
Now,
watch this.
I'm
the
looking
freeze
for,
frame
I'm looking
that comes
for
up.
Hands to see if we have any crystals.
Probably not.
They're hiding that very
well. We have a dome blows up, superimposed, freeze frame, right there. I like that.
That is nice.
And then, ending with a bang.
And the music swell. I like that.
And then actually what it does is it ends on
end credits.
The end credits is basically the whole society has been destroyed because the computer died.
Mm-hmm. And then we have this sort of weird,
dirtish.
Ethereal, depressing sounding music.
Well, that was the same. This is the same cue that the film started out with to introduce the city.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's the city's theme.
Yeah. In a way, you're right. It is the city's theme. The city is like a character. Gary Morgan. Mm-hmm.
Gary Morgan, right there as Billy.
That's right. Tell him I said hi when you see him. He's not going to. Ashley Cox was her name.
Bill Couch was a famous stuntman.
There you go. I think Glenn Wilder may have been one, too. Maybe.
Was he our first runner who died?
I think the other guy was the first runner. And I like that they're rerunning this image because, I mean, really, it was a lot of the imagery in this was iconic for its time.
Bill Tuttle.
You know Bill Tuttle?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Frank Vandeveer, famous person there for effects.
Oh, this is the love thing.
Bill Tuttle was my makeup teacher.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, Glenn Wilder was a stunt coordinator.
Stunt coordinator, Bill Couch.
Matt Jurasich did the matte paintings, amongst the Jurasiches. Mm-hmm. Jurasich Eye, holograms. Kenworthy snorkel camera system.
Oh, that, Dolby system, that's a big deal for 76.
Well, they would have needed the snorkel cameras for the model work.
Dallas, Texas.
There's the mall, Dallas Market Center.
And the Fort Worth Water Gardens.
Fort Worth Water Gardens.
Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which is what Cats is based on.
T.S. Eliot.
What, you mean the Broadway show?
Yes.
Cats? Mm-hmm. Oh.
That's what it's based on.
Well, I didn't know that. You heard the names, right? Macavity and Jellicle Cat.
Why, well, I
that's
just
awesome cats,
used
yeah.
those. I hadn't read T.S. Eliot, and I didn't know the history of that show, so kind of cool. You learn something every day.
Yeah. That's what Film Gronk is all about.
I'm telling you.
Uh-huh.
Why'd we just start talking like Kentucky people?
Is that what Kentucky people talk like?
Yeah, it's a lot closer to Kentucky than Texas.
Fort Worth.
I have no idea.
You're going to get some mad people in Kentucky when they listen to this.
Or no, I'm from there. I can make fun if I want to.
I was just talking like Duncan.
That's right. That's right. We weren't talking like Kentucky people. We were talking like Duncan.
Oh, I guess there's that.
So Dunk, how was this seeing this with us again, now that you've it's your second time seeing it, right?
Interesting. Well, yeah, like better to get that context of people that actually saw it in the theater and kind of have that perspective on it also. It's very interesting. Stuff I hadn't thought about before.
Mm-hmm.
Cool stuff. Yeah. I don't know if I would like break someone into the sci-fi genre by showing them this, but
it's definitely
an iconic film in the whole like history of the genre.
This was part of your education that I was doing. You know, iconic 70s sci-fi movies.
Do you have like a curricula?
We got to do Soylent Green.
I don't know. We just kind of like poking around. I introduced Omega Man to you, didn't I?
Yeah.
And Soylent Green. Exactly. I've been
taking
you.
Wait, did you already do it?
No. Duncan and I, a couple years ago, was like, you've got to see some of these films. So I come over and we watch these movies. This is one of the films.
We should do Soylent Green.
We should do Soylent Green.
It's a good one.
So we should
also
arrange.
Also an iconic
should we
film.
Arrange? Well, I'll have to talk with Tim about arranging this.
Maybe we could do a Soylent Green and what's our Disney film here? Black Hole.
Black Hole.
Black Hole. There's a double feature for you.
Wow. So, Jim, what did you think of this? What did you think of this?
You know, I started to watch the film a few weeks ago. Again, I didn't get very far into it before I got interrupted, but I'm really glad to have seen it again.
By sleep?
No. Yeah, by, I got interrupted by my own inability to stay awake. No, it was fun to see it. You know, it's funny. There's a lot of sort of sexy material in there that I standalone is kind of, you know, it's like, ooh, hot girls, ooh, sexy society, but it's not sexy when you look at the sort of the context that it's all in.
No, it is a lot like THX, which I do want to do one day also. I love THX.
Which I've not seen.
You should see that.
Yeah.
It is actually really, really good. It is an early film. It plays almost like an independent film, an independent sci-fi film from 1970, which is exactly what it was. But it's really cool. Really well shot.
We should see Sleeper.
Well, we could. There's a lot
Woody
of things
Allen?
We should see.
Yeah, Woody Allen.
Tim?
It's kind of fun.
Logan's Run.
How it's dated since 76, you know, the younger set, definitely what I read on forums and chat rooms, DVD reviews. It's all about how cheesy the film is.
What was the budget on this film?
I don't know. It was not an epic, but it was not a B film, that's for sure.
Yeah, it looks like they had money, but clearly they had to cut back in some areas and had to do something. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
I can see the cheese through dating of certain production aspects and as we said, some directorial things and writing. But what it's about, its message, and I think what it is about as a screenplay and a story is very cool.
And I think that's why there's been such an effort literally for the past 10 years to get a remake done. It's gone like, you know, mm-hmm. through 5-6 different directors, and they just can't get it right, but they're still trying to do it, which says something about it.
So I'm very biased, because to me, I'm always 11 years old when I see this movie.
Yes.
And it brings that back to me, and it brings back that wow factor that I had seeing it when I was 11 years old, which won't date. And so there's a lot to it that is very comforting to me for some reason.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy revisiting it.
I wish it ended a little better. I didn't. Feel, yeah. I don't feel like it ends well.
No, it doesn't end well. You know, well, because the whole city blows up.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I think they sort of.
It's a Dr. No ending.
It's
you mean in its execution?
In its execution. It's,
rather
it's
than its message?
Yeah, I mean, I think the message is fine. I would right. like to see but, that. But
it was
better,
a slapdash.
I think they ran out of time and they were like, okay, let's skip to here or who knows. I mean, all the things that happened.
For everything that happened in Washington, D.C. and all that dialogue and all that chunks in there of travel and things,
yeah.
if they had switched that perspective to fleshing out the ending, I think it would have been a better film.
I'm curious. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to.
So.
We should talk to Gary about it. Well, not that Gary will know about it. Maybe he'll know something about the production. That was.
Perhaps.
I mean, for artification. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Maybe we should have gotten him for this. Oh, well. That's
Who does the commentary on the DVD? I know Michael York does a commentary. Michael Anderson on it, too?
I think Michael York, Michael Anderson, I think one of the writers does, too.
I haven't really heard that. That's what I'd like
I think I've listened to it before. I don't remember distinctly anything about it, but I mean, I'm sure y'all can do some research. But the point is, I mean, for 76, I think it was really quite a thing. And once again, I will always be 14 I'll be kind of 14 and kind of in my 20s when I saw it again, or 30s. And it's like, okay, some of the things don't hold up as well, but they're still, I can still remember parts of it. Yeah, that really just appealed to me. And that's why I said,
Jenny Agutter.
Right. I mean, I mentioned, always Jenny Agro. I mentioned this to someone else, who's a little younger than I am yesterday, and she said, oh, Logan's Run. I mean, and she had that response.
Right.
So I think definitely if you're of a certain age, you remember it if you were into this kind of thing. And so it's interesting to come to it later, like you did, Duncan, or even the kids who say it's all cheeserific. There are some things. It depends. I mean, but that's the way with, we were with movies that were like 20, 30 or 40 years old, made before that we were. And it always happens.
To me, it sums up completely the state of cinematic science fiction at that point.
At 76, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it was, guys.
Yeah,
and that's
thematically,
what movies
technologically.
Were. Yeah. And then a thing called Star Wars came and blew us out of our chairs.
Well, this might be a good, along those lines, a context movie if you wanted to introduce someone to Star Wars, which I have done before. Some people just haven't seen it, and say, okay, here's context. Let's watch Logan's Run.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was the benchmark. Now watch this.
Right.
That was a year later.
The benchmark, insane. Truly, 2001 is its own entity. That is its own thing. That just is the amazing thing it is. Planet of the Apes is what it is, but Logan's Run for the 70s, and that time pretty much sums up what we were digesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
cool.
Looking forward, strangely enough, to seeing what they do. They say, IMDb says 2012 for the Ryan Gosling version. So that's next year.
Mm-hmm.
You think we're going to see Jenny in it?
Let's see what happens.
She's only 59.
Maybe Michael York can play the old man now.
That would
you know,
be
awesome
cool.
if they played an old
really cool.
couple, the two of them.
Oh, that would
that
be the
would
best.
Be a nice cameo.
That would
hey,
be the best.
I hope whoever's right. Hey, Alex Garland, if you're listening right now, or anyone over whoever's making. I don't even know who's making this. Certainly not MGM.
no, I did not.
I guess maybe it's Warner's. Hey. This is our idea. Do that.
Right.
So on that note, I want to thank you again for joining us for Logan's Run. Go out, check your crystal, and if it's blinking red, run.
Runner!
So this has been...
Jim Usterman.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And...
Tim McMillan.
And Serge Delpierre. And this has been Film Grok. See ya.
Film Grok.
Film Grok. Film Grok. Film Grok.